expand this morning our guest pastor, Mark Taylor, from the Friendship Baptist Church, and he's going to lead us in prayer. Pastor.
Father, we gather here today, Lord, we are grateful, Lord, to come before you with humble hearts. We thank you, Lord, for the life that we have in Christ our Savior. We thank you, Lord, for this day that you've given us. I pray, Lord, for each and every one of our commissioners today, that, Lord, you would grant them spiritual wisdom to know your saving grace and your love. Lord, I pray that you grant them wisdom to dispense of the business for our county. Lord, to take care of things as they need to keep you in mind, Lord, as they make decisions for the people here in Taylor County. Lord, just pray that you give them that special wisdom to do the right thing that needs to be done today. I pray that you bless them, bless their families, Lord, bless them for their service to the people. And I pray all of this and ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I want to thank our pastor for being here today. We really appreciate all the pastors that come and lead us in prayer. And just because you came one time, come back again. Don't think that it's a one-time thing. You're welcome anytime. Thank you. And I want to welcome everyone else who's here today on this crisp, beautiful March spring morning. Okay. Our next meeting will be next Tuesday. It's a workshop, and it'll be at 6 o'clock. And then the meeting after that is Monday, April the 1st. So feel free to come back. We'd love to have you on the phone. Number 3, approval of the agenda. I do know we've got a couple of changes. We're going to remove item number 23, and that will be put back on at a later date. And in its place, we're going to add the board to consider approval of resolution to support grant application for funding assistance to the Florida Boating Improvement Program for improvements to and the rehabilitation of the Steam Hatcher Boat Ramp as agendaed by Melody Cox, Grant Director. Are there any other changes, deletions, or anything else to today's agenda? If not, is there a motion to approve the revised agenda?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Moody, second by Commissioner Murphy. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Bids, public hearings, numbers 4. The board, having heretofore advertised to receive bids for the leasing of 80 plus acres to be harvested as hay at Perry Foley Airport, set for this day at 9 a.m. or as soon thereafter as possible.
Okay, I got you a staff sheet by your desk, which is without this one. We only got 2 bids. The first bid is American Aluminum Accessories, which is the one seal. And the next bid we got is Dorman Hay Company. and their bid is $65 an acre with a total cost per year of $5,200.
Okay, and the bid committee is?
Jane Boothby, Ward Kettering, and myself. And we realized that a hold harmless was missing from the bid packet. Before we award the bid, we will make sure that the bidder signs this form.
Okay, and y'all will bring that your recommendation at the April 1st
yes,
meeting? Okay, thank you.
Yolanda, we realized that when we got this, so one of your bidders is already got that excuse.
Okay.
So we got the form on Friday before we submitted this.
Yes, ma'am, thank you for that.
Next on the agenda are the consent items 5 through 12. Are there any questions or concerns with the consent agenda?
Just on the ones where Cross Point Baptist Church, y'all need to sign the same forms that they did with regard to hold harmless. If y'all approve that, which you've done, I think we're 2 years running, this will be about, I think, the third year, if I'm not mistaken.
I spoke with him earlier this week, and or yesterday, and he said he would come by your office and sign, if that's okay with you, or I can have the form here.
Got the form there, and you know, just kind of regurgitate it,
yes,
put the right dates on it, and I think you've got it.
Okay. Any other concerns? If not, is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Motion to approve. Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Public request number 13, Sierra Anderson, Northwest Florida District Director for U.S. Senator Rick Scott, to appear to introduce herself to the board. Good morning.
Good morning, y'all.
Thank you for being here today.
Thank you. Y'all have seen it. It's nice and beautiful. I think it's cold. I'm really here today to introduce myself to everyone. So I'm going to turn my body back and forth. And I won't pick it up. I apologize. But my name is Sierra Anderson. I serve as the Northwest Florida District Director for Senator Scott. So my primary role is to act as the community liaison between the Senator's administration and the local counties. All of my counties include you all. Madison and all the way on over to Escambia, so I've been traveling a lot. Currently I reside in Tallahassee, but I will be relocating to Pensacola because I'm still be within my region, so I still want to be a member of your community. Yes, I won't live here, but I want to celebrate with you guys. We have big events that are coming up, groundbreakings, ribbon cuttings, things like that, but I also want to make sure that I'm advocating for you guys. We have, our goal is to represent you all to the senator and then to have him in aggregate represent all 67 counties. So I only have 18, so it's a lot easier for me to advocate for you guys as opposed to having him come and then you guys spread him thin. So we're kind of here to be as strong as the best representatives and advocates for you all. We do ask that you bear in mind that the transition was a little bit slower for us due to some other extenuating circumstances up in D.C., so we ask for a little bit of patience as we figure out our processes with letter requests, grant requests, scheduling requests. Generally, it is a little bit harder to get him down to the state now just because he's got to work there 4 out of 5 days, but I am more than capable to go ahead and listen to legislative advocacy components, scheduling requests that you're doing. Generally, when we do have scheduling requests, if you'd like to meet with the senator at some point when you go to D.C., I will ask that you schedule a meeting with me first so that way I can hear the legislative component first, and then I can go ahead and give it back up to him so that way your meeting is much more productive because he's not hearing it all for the first time. In addition to that, I'm more than happy to sit down and talk about anything, learn about more about Taylor Madison, all the counties, just because I'm from Tampa, so I'm learning everything I can. I do have my contact information that's been provided to Ms. Wanda. I've called several of you sometimes, so you'll start to recognize that 863 number. Just go ahead, plug me in. And then with emails, it's a little difficult, so I ask that you both share my personal email and my professional one, just so that way I can promise the quickest means of communication with you all. That's all I have. Any questions for me?
Any questions or I have a question. Do you have some cars that you can give us?
I don't have an office, so I definitely don't have cars right now. But once I do, I'll make sure that I send a few of them out to you all. And you're more than welcome to put them in your offices and within your government complexes, as well as your constituent casework as well, or help connect people to the proper person. And we will do mobile office hours soon enough. But that's going to take some time to get rolling up.
Okay. Anybody else? Well, we look forward to working with you and meeting with you, and thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Item 14, the board to consider approval to allow the Taylor County Special Olympics Inshore Fishing Tournament to use Keaton Beach Coastal Park and to waive any fees as requested by Lieutenant Lynn Gray. Good morning.
Good morning. I thank the board for letting me come. I didn't think I was going to be here. My apologies. Some things got rescheduled and I was able to. With that, it is fishing season again. We are having our Special Olympics fishing tournament on April 13th. I am humbly requesting that the board approve for us to again use the coastal park down at Eaton Beach. We have used it the last 2 years on your approval, and it has been a tremendous success. The last 2 years have actually, the tournament itself has been bigger than the previous 7 years, so we were excited about the tournament. As I said a couple of years ago, it's a big fundraiser for Special Olympics Taylor County. We don't get as much money from the state as we would like, and the fishing tournament's a big help. So I have, and I think I added the wrong one to the packet, so I got you a new one this morning, but I have regurgitated Mr. Bishop's whole harmless agreement from several years ago. I put the dates, the years, of course, the same, and with your approval, I added us as Special Olympics. Some things have been happening with the state, and we aren't always, as volunteers, your release from liability, so to speak. So I also put that in there as well with y'all's approval. That will be the whole harmless agreement that we'll have our participants sign this year as well. So as far as the fees for the boat ramp and the path, we have waived those entirely to your discretion. We have a bunch of people from out of town that come in. They're driving all the way from out of town. I don't think $5 for a boat ramp fee is gonna really bother them a whole bunch. So again, that is this money for the county. Still,
you have my 100% support. I think this is a wonderful endeavor, and I want to thank you for your leadership and for your volunteering your time to do this. Any way that I can help at any time, I'm more than welcome to.
Well, we are looking for sponsors for fishing categories this year.
Are you ready?
I think I've got most of the money good to go as far as sponsorship. Everything is, honestly, what we don't get sponsorship, me and my wife usually take care of, but I may be in touch with you.
We just, and let us know each year ahead of time, so that we can help y'all out individually,
Absolutely. We do appreciate it. It's for a great cause. These athletes, their families and themselves are scraped in because of medical care and different things that they have to do. And every, honestly, cent helps them. So. And if we can get them down to state games and area games, it's somewhere they can go and, just legitimately be around people like themselves and actually be somebody. So for that, we appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Any questions? That's pretty much my spiel this morning.
Anybody else?
Okay.
Is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve, and I want to say, Lynn, appreciate your time and effort.
It's a,
like that chair said, this is a really a worthy cause.
No pat on the back, because that's not why we do it. We do it so that, these folks can have some semblance of a normal life. So, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah, we know that. And thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
We have a motion.
Is and a second.
We have a second by Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank
good
you.
Good luck. Thank you. Yeah.
Item 15, Ursula Miller to appear to request the board to waive public boat ramp fees for Hooked on Heroes Take a Veteran Fishing Day to be held on Saturday, April the 6th.
Everybody's going fishing. did you get the Is that in the packet? You saw the gist of what Hooked on Neighbors is about?
Yes.
They have been, and this is their fourth year coming to Taylor County. They will max out at 200 veterans, is their maximum amount. Right now, they have 175 registered. These vets are, majority are Vietnam vets. Many of them are in wheelchairs or portable wheelchairs, oxygen tanks, the whole nine yards. They've not been able to fish, they're disabled and such as that. Some haven't fished in 20-some years, and you sit down and talk to them, and they'll say, this will be my last time because I'm not coming back yet next year because my health is down and I'm not going to be able to make it. I mean, it's a sad situation, but yet when you see their faces come off the boat, it brings tears to your eyes. There's many local companies. Sea-Hags is hosting it. 95% of the money that this nonprofit raises is spent in Taylor County putting this function on. We do have local businesses. Sea-Hags donates boats. Riverhaven Marina Boat, they donate boats and golf carts for the function. Maddie's Market in Seen Hatchie also supplies subs for their little lunch bag that they take out with them. The American Legion has stepped in this year to help provide the sheriff's office. They're going to cook chicken and rice for them when they get back in. Locals donate prizes for the veterans. It's not a tournament, but they do give prizes out to the vets for like the largest fish, most often, such as that. It's a great organization, and they ask that the board consider giving them 20 passes to waive any boat ramp fees for anyone that's not a local that doesn't, they're just coming here for that one time to take that fishing. And that's all we're asking for.
Okay. Thank you for your volunteering to be involved with this. It's a great cause.
And I suggest that y'all come down there at some point during that day.
I would like
they'll to. They'll be out in the, they'll be there in the morning, and then they, I think they come back at 3 p.m.
3? Uh-huh. Oh, that's on the 9th. April the 9th, right?
6.
Sheriff Padgett is a big supporter. He goes one-on-one and talks to the vets. Johnson's Donuts sends a truckload of donuts down there, and when they get out of their little buses, they'll say, where's those donuts at? They know the donuts. But it's a great cause, and they usually take off around 8, so, and they come back in at 3, and they'll have the dinner at 3, after 3. So if any of y'all have a chance, and they did complain last year that no representation from Taylor County was there. And that was my first year there, so.
Yeah. I plan to be here. Is there any, if you need any help in, of any kind of serving or doing anything else?
I will check on the serving the dinner because the sheriff from a different county is putting that on.
Just check with me later.
Absolutely.
Tonight or whenever you get a chance and let me know if there's any way that I can help. I'd be more than happy to.
And then what they want to do is get the passes, and they will have a person, because all these guys are pre-registered, and they will have a person at the ramp with the list of registered boat drivers so that we don't get somebody in there that's not involved, and we're giving a pass to someone that's not even involved with the program.
Do you have enough captains each year to take all these people out?
We did, and they're not charter captains. These are individuals that are volunteering to take their own boats to go down there and take a vet out. And they do have an option where the boat drivers can get 15 gallons of gas that the Hooked on Heroes will pay for, but most of them turn it down and just say, I'll put it in myself.
Mm-hmm. So you have enough for this year?
As far as I know, yes, he was maxed out.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And he may need help, they may need a little help on the land side of it, which I did that last year, and it's, you can sit down and talk to them one-on-one, and it's hard not to cry.
It's a wonderful thing.
It is.
I remember when Ron Cable was talking about this about 5-6 years ago to get it started.
Yes.
And it's come this far.
Yes.
It's a wonderful thing.
And last year, they had 165 registered, and the day of the tournament, I believe 100 and 131 somewhere in there showed up.
Yeah. How does the work get out? How's it advertised?
Hooked on Heroes goes all year long setting up tents at the Deborah Fiddler's Festival. They set up tents, gave out information on their program, and they get donations. They go around doing fish fries and hamburger sales and stuff like that, setting up a tent and raise money all year long. And it's all spent down here, 95% of it.
But how did the veterans find out about this?
I think a lot of it's word of mouth, but Ron himself is a veteran. And I don't know if they have an inside thing where they, a veterans list or whatever. But the majority, like I said, the majority of them are disabled vets. You will get some younger, late, there is actually ladies that come in, ladies and men, it's mixed.
You know, locally here we have American Legion and VFW.
Correct.
And they meet regularly, I think every month. So maybe that's something that they could...
Well, see, the American Legion and Steam Hatchie, they weren't associated with them for the first few years, and I went down and met with them, and now they're in on it, and they're helping with the dinner this year and helping Friday for setup.
So, sounds like it's continuing to grow.
It's growing.
Mm-hmm.
And they started out at Keaton, but they outgrew it. Mm-hmm. And that's why they had to move to Steam Hatchie.
That's good. That's a good thing.
Excellent.
Okay. Any other comments?
I think it's a very worthy cause.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I certainly support.
Absolutely. Is there a motion to approve?
I make a motion to approve.
I'll second that.
Okay, we've got a motion by Commissioner Murphy, second by Commissioner Page. Any further discussion?
Just a quick comment. Miss Annie Mae, do you mind making the placards or the passes? Okay. Like you are for the other event, and then you'll have something to display.
Yeah, and I'm not saying we'll use all 20 of them, but if you want the ones, the unused ones back, we will.
No, I just print them on the computer on big yellow things so they can put them on the dash of the vehicle.
Great.
And if the code enforcement comes by, they'll know that they're exempt.
Okay, and then if you want to keep an official count, we can do that.
I don't know if we
do that. I do have a quick question. On the 6th, what time do y'all start setting up?
They will start setting up the tables on such as that Friday evening in Seahags.
Okay.
We have to be down there at 6 o'clock in the morning.
I see.
And we don't have donuts and
coffee. That's right.
I'm serious. The vets come in from out of county, out of state. And they've been to the event a couple of times, and it's like, where's them donuts? And they can't pick them up until Johnson's opens. So then it's like, we're not getting them. Big deal with that.
Everybody that's ever had one, they want another one.
Yes.
Anybody else? If not, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you all, and I hope to see you all there.
Thank you. Constitutional officers, other government units, item number 16, the clerk and the county attorney to discuss with the board a proposed resolution declaring an end to the Fayette County Health Facilities Authority. As I read this resolution, I didn't think that it was that long, and I'm thinking that we probably need to make a motion to read the entire resolution since it's not that long and it gives the public a chance to hear exactly what it's about.
Motion we ask the attorney to read the resolution in its entirety.
Second.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Mr. Bishop.
I don't know whether the blanks were filled in or not.
They are.
They are?
Yeah. The resolution was adopted on March 2nd, 1976.
Okay. It's a resolution declaring an end to the Taylor County Health Facilities Authority, providing for the repeal of resolution dated March 2nd. Did I get that right?
March 2nd, 1976,
which created the Taylor County Health Facilities Authority. Whereas the Taylor County Health Facility Authority was authorized by resolution dated March 6, 1976, in accordance with Chapter 74, 323 of the laws of Florida, for the purpose of acquiring, constructing, financing, or refinancing health facility. That was with regard to the nursing home. Whereas there are no outstanding bonds issued under the authority of the Taylor County Health Facility Authority, and whereas there's an annual fee of $175 required by the Florida Department of Community Affairs to maintain the Taylor County Health Facilities Authority, and whereas the Taylor County Health Facilities Authority has ceased to redeem any issued bonds under the authority of the Taylor County Health Facility Authority, now For be it resolved by the Board of County Commissioners of Taylor County, Florida as follows. Repeal, the Board of County Commissioners finds and determines that the Taylor County Health Facilities Authority is no longer needed. Pursuant to the authority granted by the Board of County Commissioners by resolution dated March 6, 1976 and section 154-207-2 Florida statutes, the Taylor County Health Facility Authority is hereby repealed. Supersede and repeal, this resolution shall supersede and repeal the above mentioned resolution which created the Taylor County Health Facility Authority to the provisions stated herein. So essentially what this is, it was kind of just cleaning up an act. I think we got a letter from them, did we not, at some point?
Yeah, the statutes changed a couple of years ago. They set annual fee of $175 because it's considered a special district of the county. Now, and we're in violation, we've been in violation for a couple of years. You have to set up a website for this thing, and we don't get any money, don't get anything. And Conrad wrote a letter, we never got any response. So my suggestion is that the board adopt a resolution, we'll disband the health facility to start, and if they come with a need to add to the facility out there or to build another one or whatever, you can start over.
Yes.
Keep this fee down, because they've waived it for the last couple of years for us. But before that, you had to pay a fee. So I would recommend the board you adopt a resolution.
It seems real cut and dry, really. Yeah. Is there a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Got a motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Murphy. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item 17, the board to consider approval of request of certificate of county match funds and the certificate of equipment as agenda by Dana Sutherland, Supervisor of Elections.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for allowing me to be here. This is the same grant that I apply for every year. It's the Federal Elections Activity Grant. There is a county match that is required as in past years. I'm not asking for the board to fund that county match. The county match is $1,055.88. I will absorb that out of my budget. But in order to apply, I do need a signature from the board in order to complete the application.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
We'll make second.
Got a motion by Commissioner Moody, second by Commissioner Murphy. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
County staff items. Number 18, the board to consider approval of a request to act as applicant and approval to hold public hearings for amendments to the Land Development Code regarding non-conforming lot partial setback requirements as agenda by Danny Griner, County Building Official. You want to come talk to us?
I will. As I understand it, the board asked Conrad to prepare a language for this, but if you'd like a brief, I'll give you a brief statement. When the future land use map was adopted in the early 90s, it placed land use categories over all sections, various sections of the county, and each of those land uses came with specific setback requirements for structures that were written into the Land Development Code. When you lay these uses over those areas, many of them had existing lot sizes in subdivisions that were much less than what's required by the future land use map. Ergo, the setbacks that go along with those land uses, causes a great deal of hardship. There are areas where you have zero property if you use the technical setbacks for those land uses. So, I think the board has agreed that that is an issue, that it was an oversight, and there should be some recognition given to the non-conforming property so that they can have a reasonable use by the residents. And that's the reason for the application, which will be an amendment to the Land Development Code. The actual amendment language is prepared by Comrade and was included in the application. And this will require a public hearing before the planning board where they'll provide a recommendation to the county commission and then a public hearing before the county commission. It doesn't require a third hearing like a comprehensive plan amendment does, so it'll be a little easier to take care of.
Okay. Any questions?
What you're saying is somebody wants to do it, they come to the planning board and get approved through the, or is it going to be open for everybody? Or
yeah, anyone, a non-conforming lot means that it existed in this size prior to the adoption of the future land use map. So it's, you can't create new ones now. These are only for lots that pre-existed the adoption of the plan. And there are many areas in the county, Shady Grove, for example, Leisure Retreats, like Leisure Retreats has 1 acre lots, but their setbacks are 35 feet from each side and 50 feet from the front and rear. That takes a big chunk out of your 1 acre lot.
In other words, somebody couldn't come up and build a subdivision and put narrow lots in it.
They would have to specifically request setbacks for that subdivision, and that would ultimately have to be approved by this board on the final plat. But no, you could not create new non-conforming lots. That's only for existing conditions that were there when the plan was adopted. Most of them are in subdivisions. For instance, Shady Grove, the subdivisions in Shady Grove would have essentially zero property if we implemented the setbacks.
Okay.
And one other one we really had problems with was the Ancient Oaks down there.
Yes, and south of Ancient Oaks, there's a whole line of parcels in that same land use where they have zero land.
Right.
The parcels are like 70 feet wide. You have 35 feet setback from each side.
Yeah.
No, that may happen, you know, so, and I know that. I feel fairly certain that it was not the intent of the board to do that at the time. It was just something that happened between the adoption of the map and then the implementation of the setbacks and the land development code, and the two didn't get looked at.
I know we had an issue with Tinghanty at the subdivision at the airport.
Yeah, and that's one of the areas that were non-conforming lots, the entire subdivision. Yeah. But that exists throughout the county. In many different areas.
In other words, that one would qualify what you're saying.
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
Now, lead me through the thought process. What you're asking us to do today is to approve an application.
Yeah, acting the board to act as the applicant.
Act as the applicant.
Right.
And then the public hearing is held before the planning board.
And then, in turn,
if they make us a recommendation, then we have another public hearing.
And it will be the adoption of an ordinance, yeah, which Conrad will
provide. I think the right thing to do, and I'll make a motion, Madam Chair, to see our, that we go ahead and approve this application.
Okay. Yeah. We have the original somewhere over there that would need to be signed by the chairperson.
Okay. Yeah. We have a motion by Commissioner Page, and I believe the second by Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item 19, the board to consider transfer of funds from contingency to cover cost of replacement of septic tank drain fields at the driver's license office as agendized by the county building official. I believe that was in the amount of $2,750. Is there a motion to approve?
Move approval.
We got a motion from Commissioner Page and a second from Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item 20. The board to consider approval of grant application for the Lionfish Education Exhibit as agendized by Victor Blanco, County Marine Agent. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Last year we received a notification from a third party about this grant opportunity. That was the moment of the transition when Mr. Lakey left the county administration and LaWanda took over. So I put it in hold and then I sent to LaWanda to consider if we she thought it was a good option for us to send an application, which said, okay, let's pursue that. So I kept in contact with this third party because they do all the design. It seems like they somehow they work for FWC for proposals. So they made like the template of how the blueprint is going to look like and all that. I provide some information. Fortunately, last year we did the artificial reef monitoring in Buckeye, and we found no lionfish in our artificial reef, which was really good news. But you know, we were expecting to see lionfish. So I think it's a great opportunity to have this display, a permanent display in our Forest Capitol Hall building all the time, so people who visit the building can be aware of the threat that these invasive species can have over our commercial fisheries in the region.
Yeah, I see where the it's $2,492.40. Now, is this something that I was a little confused? I read this two or three times. So we will apply for the grant, and then if we get the grant, then we'll do this.
That's right.
Okay. So why would something not be posted, say, at the boat ramps where? But of course, we've not seen any lionfish in Taylor County, though, right?
Yes, we haven't. Well, some fishermen have reported seeing lionfish in the past. Actually, we were concerned that not to see the lionfish on the Boca Reef. In February, I was invited by FUC to a lionfish summit they hold in the Panhandle area. And what they have seen is that now the lionfish are migrating to deeper waters because there's a big effort harvesting lionfish in the Panhandle area specifically because they have large artificial reef structures, a lot of artificial reef, like offshore and inshore. So they have seen the lionfish migrating to deeper water. So perhaps what we saw is just that the time where we hold the monitoring, the lionfish migrated, maybe during the cold waters in winter when the water's cold, they migrate back to the artificial reef. We are not sure about that. But certainly we have heard some spear fishermen saying that they have seen lionfish in the areas.
What are the size of these fish?
They can be found from maybe 10 to 30 a foot long. They can grow pretty big, and they are herbivorous. It means that they eat other fish. So when our gag groupers or snappers are juveniles, lionfish will predate on them, and that's really the big threat that they represent to the ecology in our waters.
Can they be consumed by humans?
Yes, they can be consumed, and
so
that's
it's a good
part.
Fish to eat, then.
Yes, yes. There are in their spines, they have some kind of poison, but once you take them out of the water, that poison is neutralized. So you, with the proper care of handling, can just fillet that, and actually there's a big promotion to consume lionfish.
As I was reading about this, and reading about the poison, and it did state in there that if you are stung, to apply hot or warm water, and that's the same thing with a stingray. If you get stung by a stingray, mm-hmm. you should apply warm water. I know I've seen people coming down the canal with ice on a stingray wound, and that just is the worst thing you can do. It's just that poison just goes crazy then, mm-hmm. and by the time they get to the hospital, it's a you know, it's pretty bad. So I just want to remind people to not use ice, use that warm water.
Mm-hmm, yes.
But it's just, you know, naturally people want to put ice on something. And you're just feeding that bacteria. Are there any other questions or comments?
How many counties have it again after call in and state.
Well, this is an open call for proposal from FWC, so I'm not aware exactly how many counties were applied, but I'm pretty sure that the Panhandle areas mainly they will send some proposals for
how long this. How long have they been in this area in Panhandle? I mean, something happened in the last 10 years?
Well, you mean the lionfish invasion?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it started late 90s, and it has increased really rapidly in the last decade. So, in the Panhandle area, thing is they're still trying to understand the patterns of the distribution of the lionfish, how they migrate. Now, fortunately, they're seeing that there is some cannibalism. So lionfish are starting to eat smaller lionfish, which is good. And also they found out that there is a disease that there is affecting the lionfish population. It creates some lacerations in their skin, and they're trying to identify what kind of virus or bacteria is causing that. So it is still a lot of research being taking place. There's a lot of questions out there. We don't have, unfortunately, we don't have all the answers. But we will have to deal with the lionfish population for the rest of our life. It came here as an invasive, but it will be there for the rest of our life.
Where did they come from? Where are they native to?
From the Indonesian, in the Pacific area. They're originally from there. So they brought, they were brought to U.S. through the aquarium trade. And during some hurricanes, a big stock was released in the water, and they start, you know, reproducing and colonizing.
Can't do that on canal, maybe.
No, that's very unlikely. Well, anything can happen, yeah.
Ms. Miller, I'm from the Aspen picture. Last year, I think FWC did a program. It was a challenge to catch lionfish, and they actually gave out cash prizes. The majority of it was in South Florida, and then there are lionfish here. I've seen them during scallop season in grasses.
Oh,
and yeah. I don't know the real quick. It's like an underwater bat, big one by two.
Yes.
Mark Bono, 338 Fort Slaughter, right back. Now that I work part-time at Woods and Water, I'm learning a lot more about fishing and hunting. But I was pulling this up, right? She said that the 2018 lionfish conference showed, this is statewide, they had 28,000 lionfish submitted to them.
Yeah.
Recreationally, 10,117, commercial, 16,000 pounds, which was equivalent to 18,000 lionfish. And they do have a challenge where, and I think South Florida is going to win this. Fortunately for us, they had much worse down there.
Yeah.
And the winner had, just individually, had hundreds that they caught.
Yeah. A lot of scuba divers will get bruised and
yes.
Amongst themselves.
Wow, that's interesting.
I have a question.
Ms. Pemberton?
Okay.
I just wanted to clarify, this is for educational exhibits
yes.
at Forest Capitol Hall.
Yes, that's right.
Is the material not suitable to put place signage down at the boat ramps? I know some of these outdoor.
Yes, we can request a change on the design, and maybe instead of having one display on the Capitol Hall, have two smaller size in the boat ramps.
Yeah. What about the fact that you put it seam matching the boat ramps? Can you not do something like
that's
that?
That's what
around
I was,
the restroom area or at a key?
That's what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
That
that's where your boaters are coming in.
Do you think we would get more traffic? Because I mean, I know we have a lot of traffic at Forest Capitol Hall.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if the impact would be any different if we had signage at the boat ramps.
Yeah. We can decide where to put
okay.
the display.
Okay.
So it was just the proposal to do it in the Forest Capitol Hall.
So we can
instead have those in the boat ramps.
Yeah, and I let's not forget Mandalay and Ikumfina.
if we could do some small, we don't have to have big signs,
mm-hmm.
but there's quite a few people that go out from those two boat ramps as well.
Okay.
So if we could do some small, you know, something mm-hmm. small, but Commissioner Murphy?
I had a question about the lionfish. Are there any talks or considerations about putting lionfish on the commercial trade?
For consumption, you mean?
For consumption.
Yes, yes. Actually, in this summit that I mentioned that was held two months ago, there was a big representation of the commercial area where they were trying to get with fishermen of what they needed to put in the market. Some restaurants, they're offering lionfish as a special... not sushi, but the thing is that they're trying to work with the price to be competitive, because not everybody is aware of the flavor of lionfish. And if you're gonna pay a plate $15 to $20 for a lionfish, some people will prefer to get a grouper or snapper instead.
But there are talks about food.
Yeah, but it's a very good yes. It is a very good. It has a very good taste, a very good texture. So people like it. I have tasted it myself, and it's really good.
It is. Thank you.
Is it more comparison to like an amberjack, or like more milder, like a grouper?
It's very white. Yes, I would say more like a grouper.
Mm-hmm. More milder.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Price up some.
We'll try.
Yeah. When you see one, I will bring them.
It makes good sushi.
Yeah, I heard about the sushi. Yeah, maybe the Asian market will.
If you had the picture there at the boat ramp and a little information for the people, instead of kicking and just throwing it back,
mm-hmm.
if they could be told that fish could be eaten,
yeah.
keep right. this fish is good eaten, but and have a little information about the poison.
Yes, yes, yes.
I don't know if that would be very helpful along the
yes,
way around.
The safety.
But most people wouldn't know what it was, and they'd throw it back.
And you could put it on there too if they don't want it. It's somewhere up on my dock there on the canal. As long as I'm home.
I'll ship that there along with you.
No, I want it there for a week, but anytime on the weekend. Any other discussion? If not, is there a motion to approve?
I make a motion to approve.
Second.
Okay, motion by Commissioner Murphy, second by Commissioner Moody. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Item 21, the board to consider approval of grant application for the Buckeye Artificial Reef Construction and Enhancement as agenda by the County Marine Agent.
Yeah, well, in 2016 was the last year that some deployments were made in Boca Reef. Well, last year we had the monitoring program, and we saw that the material is doing great. It's aggregating a lot of fish. We were discussing with some charters that go to their fishery, and they're happy to take the people there because they never come from NGNs. So we still have some room in the Buckeye Reef to do some more deployments, and the idea is to try to get this grant for $60,000 to build new artificial reef modules and deploy them in these identified areas within the Buckeye Reef.
Fishing is such a big industry for us, and it brings in a lot of dollars.
Yes.
So, is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
I'd like to say one thing about it. Have you had any luck on the application for your inshore reef, the shallow water reef?
The thing is that in the case of new deployments, we got to have a permitted site. Early this year, we had a meeting with the directors of the Taylor County Reef Research Team, and we already have a plan in place. Now that we already have some divers trained to do the surveys in the artificial reef, part of the work for this year is to go and do some surveys on shallow water. We will try to see if we go to where it was Amber Reef, do some surveys there and see if we can repermit that. It's still 5 miles offshore, but at least it's the closest. To get a new permit, the cycle is about 2 years, but certainly that's in our portfolio of to-do things.
We've been talking that for 2 or 3 years.
Yes, we have discussed that.
We need them. A lot of people don't have a boat to go 20 miles. They want to stay 4 or 5 miles.
Yes. The thing is that we have the seagrass protect area, so you have to be further away from the seagrass.
Right.
Areas
because you're working in that direction.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes.
Anybody else? If not, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item 22, the board to consider approval of grant application for Buckeye Artificial Reef Monitoring as agendaed by the County Marine. And you've been busy.
Yes. And this is a good thing. Last year we got the grant. We are still working on the final report here. But the good thing is that we were invited by AFWC to present our the results of our monitoring program last year in the Panhandle area with other artificial reef managers and county marine county extension agents. And the director of Florida Sea Grant has appointed me as the coordinator for the statewide monitoring program between the University of Florida and Sea Grant. To train and to bring the information of how we put together the whole monitoring program here in Taylor County. They are very, very satisfied with the results, not only because of the coordinations, but also because of the results. We had a YouTube channel with 36 videos, and now we are in plans to invite, I think it's like 15 scuba diving operators, which we're going to take to Buckeye Reef to see if they can bring more charters to go diving. We saw a couple of really nice places where they can go diving in Buckeye Reef. So all of these things are putting in the right place. We shared information with the Chamber of Commerce, all the videos and pictures, so they can use that material to make promotional material for the county. For fishermen and for diving. So I think we are having good results with this investment. So this year, last year was 16,000, this year is only 10,000. Last year we bought some equipment, this year we don't need to buy equipment. So that money is just to pay for charters and to take the boats out and to do the training.
You got a rough job, don't you?
Oh. It's a job. It sounds like fun, but it's a job. It's hard.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion.
Okay. We have a motion by Commissioner Murphy, a second by Commissioner Moody. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you so much.
And point of still, I'd like to ask you one question. When you carry people out like that, where would the liability fall if somebody with you got hurt? Would that fall on the county?
What we did last year with the monitoring, everything was planned through the Taylor County Reef Research Team. And we asked all the divers to sign an ability form releasing any damage from to the county or the University of Florida. In this case, we're going to try to do the same. I'm pretty sure some of the diving operators that we're going to buy, they will come with their own boat. So that keeps us just out of that. I'm just going to be like a guide. Say, okay, let's go visit this side. We're going to show them around. And we're going to discuss, do a debriefing of the fish sandwiches and, you know, just deliver some information about Buckeye Reef.
I'm just wondering about the liability.
Yeah, yes, I've always been very aware.
I'm sure the great part is going on the whole harness.
Yeah, I asked them to sign the
video. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, our general business, item number 23, has been replaced with the board to consider approval of resolution to support grant application for funding assistance to the Florida Voting Improvement Program for improvements to and the rehabilitation of the Sting Hatchet Boat Ramp as agenda by Melanie Cox, Grants Director. Is there a motion to read the grant by Tom Lowley?
Motion. Second.
We got a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
I don't know whether this one has a title, but we'll read the first whereas is. Whereas the state of Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission established the Florida Voting Improvement Program, and whereas Board of County Commissioners of Taylor County is eligible to receive a grant awarded under this program to improve the county's voting areas for its citizens.
Thank you. You want to tell us what needs to be done?
Yes, ma'am. Back in 2016, the board originally approved the grant application for this project, which is the docking project at Sting Hatchet Boat Ramp. It was approved. We have a match that is funded of $72,000, but in the interim, from what I understand, there have been several staffing changes, and there's been a delay receiving our contract from this agency. And in the interim, there have been construction costs that we feel like have gone up substantially in order to complete this project. So what we are asking the board to approve is a new grant application to the funding agency that would cover all of the construction costs. And there's a very tight turnaround, which is why we are asking that the chairman be able to sign the grant application, and then we will bring it back to the board to ratify either her signature or my signature, however it turns out as far as the timing. If we are not awarded the additional money, we will still have our original grant amount. We just feel like it is not enough to complete the project.
Let's go for a new again. Is there a motion?
Motion for a second.
Got a motion and a second. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you. Thank you. The county administrator items, number 24, the county administrator to discuss informational items.
Just as informational, we anticipate that we will start spraying for mosquito control in about 2 weeks, depending on the weather. I know we had a little bit of a warm period, which was rapidly followed by a cooler period. So that, of course, affects the activity of the mosquitoes. Once the temperature is above 60 degrees at night, is when we typically spray. We are doing the landing pouch now, but I would encourage people to call mosquito control if they see activity. We have drivers on board. We are advertising for additional drivers, but we feel like we're ready to start in about 2 weeks. We have plenty of ducks and bits. We're getting ready to order some more. And we received an additional funding amount of about $9,500 for chemicals this year. So we feel fairly well prepared. We just feel like it's going to be a very active season.
Well, I can tell you, in my neighborhood in town, there's already activity. In the evenings, they're biting.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
Same out of my place.
Yes. So as you get calls from citizens, please encourage them to call the number, the 838-3539, and leave a message. And, you know, those counts are what, and the calls are what, prompt us to spray.
Say that number again, 838?
3539.
3539.
Yes.
Okay. Hold on. Yes.
Usually when we talk about mosquitoes, you always ask me if we're going to do a story about it. I actually talked to Luana yesterday, and she gave me everything she just told you,
yes.
And we should have a story tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Just so we can pass the information along, are you offering the pellets and the spray this year?
I noticed the bits and the dunks. Yes, I'm not sure about the spray. I know that we have plenty of bits and dunks to get started. Okay. And then we're getting ready to order some more. That usually depends on our budget.
Yeah. But where we're at is the lowest standing water.
Oh, yes.
And then one of our neighbors is the one that's
And we always monitor that, and if we see disease activity, I know last year we asked our service volunteers to help us spread the word, and we work very closely with the Department of Health. So we'll
many of the neighbors go and get the pellets, I send them up and get it up here, there, and then they treat around it.
Yes.
So that helps.
Yes, I would encourage that. Thank you. Our beautiful new fire truck is here. I know Dan's very excited.
Very, very excited.
So that will be housed at Station 1. And then Dan will be rotating our truck, the trucks that we have in service, to retire an older truck.
We're actually expecting we might be able to retire two of our older trucks. The way this truck is specced out, it was built to replace two. It's going to effectively replace a tanker and an engine. Because with the tank size, it carries 1,800 gallons of water, which a traditional engine only carries 1,000. So we did some design things to make it more for Cable County instead of just what a traditional fire truck would work. And our guys are currently wrapping up their training. It's a new type of pumping system, so they're getting all their training on that one. We've got a mount equipment and stuff like that, so in the upcoming weeks, we'll see that truck on the service.
It's beautiful. I'm so proud.
That's good. Bunker equipment, stuff like that, are y'all okay?
Yes, over the past couple of years, we've come up with a plan. So instead of coming to the board with one time, like we did in the past, we said we need 30 sets of bunker gear. I developed a plan a couple of years back where we buy a few sets every year using some grant match money. And we've been able to keep us on a nice rotation where we don't have to come and ask for capital money.
And if you'll recall, we are paying our payments for the fire truck with our 1 cent fund. So that does help free up some operational funding for things like bunker gear and other operational needs.
Refresh my memory. Was that a lease agreement on the fire truck?
It's called.
Was that right purchase?
No, it's titled the lease agreement, but it's a financing.
Financing. Mm-hmm. So at the end of some point in time, we'll own a fire truck?
Yes.
At the end of the 5 years, we'll be done with payments. And there's no, like a traditional lease where you have the option to buy it, that we get, that's not us. We're essentially just financing. We're making our 5 years worth of payments, and then we'll be done.
Okay.
Sure. Thank you. We hope to build the personnel manager position hopefully this week. We are moving through the final stages of that recruiting process. And our purchasing agent has announced he will be retiring in May, so we are advertising for that position externally at this point, and I will keep you posted on that. I see Mr. Ridgway is here. Our county forester met him at Stephen Springs. We reached out to our forester, and I think the verdict was the tree is officially dead.
Officially dead.
And we will work with staff to see if we need to contract that out. I think we probably will, but we will work on that in the next coming weeks. Also, Granger Bridge in Steinhatchee is closed for maintenance. From what I understand, we rebuilt that bridge about 8 years ago, and it is already in need of replacement, most likely. So we are gathering some costs for that. We've had some feedback from residents that perhaps they would like to remove the bridge because bigger vessels have to go under the bridge at lower tide. But we will gather costs and we'll come back to the board on that.
Is this a bridge that the state cannot help us with?
I don't believe it meets the parameters for that. I don't
know. It's
very small.
Does it go up Goo Island?
That's
in that area, it doesn't go to
Yes, sir.
Because I know the board replaced one going to Goo Island several years ago.
It has not been that long, and from what I understand, we do not have the equipment to set those pilings firmly in the rock. We may want to consider outsourcing or some of this, some of the what's needed to place the pilings more firmly in the rock, and that may help it last longer, from what I understand.
Yeah. Now, did you just say that some people have suggested taking it just, and so how many people use this bridge? Do we have an idea?
I don't. I've only received two phone calls since it was closed, and I believe Public Works has received a little more feedback that maybe we should remove it. I don't know if we need to have a public hearing and discuss it.
Mr. Ridgway, he probably knows all about it.
Okay. Stan Ridgway, 901 Riverside. The Granger subdivision has, at the current time, a circle road.
Right.
On the east side of the bridge that you're talking about, which is down by the river on the west side, on the east side, there are lots with homes. There are probably at least 30 homes. There may be two or three permanent residents there. The rest of them are weekenders or vacation or rentals. They go down to the bridge. Once you cross the bridge and come back up to the main road, there are lots, but nothing on the lots. They could be built. They're in the floodplain. All of Granger is. But at current, there are no homes or mobile homes or RVs past the bridge except for one, and it has been there quite a while. It goes from a permanent home to a rental and back and forth. The bridge is a wooden bridge. It is a difficult design. It has always had to have maintenance. Almost 10 years ago, people in that area were saying, why do we need the bridge? It impedes boat traffic on the local private canals, and they wanted it removed then. And at that time, when I was involved, it was pushed back in discussion when it needs to be maintained again or rebuilt. They would look at just removing it. And I do not live there. I've been over the bridge numerous times. It is a very steep bridge with a peak at the top. It is not a good bridge to drive over. Most people do not drive over it after they've driven it once or twice. I would urge the county to look at removing the bridge.
Is there access to that one house over there another way?
Oh, on the other side of the circle route, all of that area has access to,
public road.
To that side. It's a public road. Well, it's a
super bridge out. It wouldn't hold nobody from getting to their property.
Well, the bridge is closed, and we wouldn't close the bridge if we blocked access to
it. But taking it out wouldn't be no big issue to anybody.
The only concern I've heard from one citizen is that we need to make sure that if there is an emergency situation, that people can evacuate. And they stated that they use the bridge for evacuation, but I'm not sure, I don't know if they're concerned about depth of the water and being able to get out in and out the normal way. We may want to have a public hearing.
That's what I was going to ask our attorney. Yeah. Do you think that we should have a public hearing on this?
I think it would be a good idea because, because as a practical matter, you don't know what the concerns of the community. There's never really a real fault for having a public hearing to determine what your constituents want.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know I'm in favor of public hearings because I learned pretty quickly don't make decisions without input from as, you know, as many people as you can get. So I think it's a good idea as well. Yes, sir.
In your thinking, on the one side of the bridge where the majority of where all but one home is, the road face is 20 foot plus wide. When you go over the bridge to the back side, the road base is about 12 foot wide.
And you say it's intermittently used for rental and a residence, rental and a residence, is that what you said?
Okay, the majority of the homes are rental. There might be three, maybe four that are permanent.
It would seem possibly that more people are affected by not being able to traverse under the bridge. But as I said, I don't know that we've heard from everyone, but it does seem that the majority of calls that we've received so far have been more in favor of closing the bridge, so they could take their votes through there.
I would say that we schedule a public hearing, but make sure that that one home is, you know, that they are notified so that they have an opportunity.
Special invitation.
Yes, I think we make sure that they know.
And the landowners on that side, the ones a lot considered nothing on, they need to be notified too.
I'd send them letters, maybe certified letters or something, just to make sure that, you know, they don't come up later and say, well, I don't live here and I don't get your paper.
Well, we would like to, you know, look at the cost and what it would take to replace the bridge. And when we have all the information, then if it meets your approval, we'll ask to schedule a public hearing.
Okay, that's fine.
And then we can have a database of landowners.
In the meantime, we've just got to put it.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
That'll give us time to test out what it's like.
It's been closed for several weeks.
It has?
And we were...
And the world hasn't come to an end.
No, sir. March 26th, as you know, is the workshop. So far on the agenda, we have representatives from... to discuss the rail grant, we'll be here. We would like to discuss solid waste operations, and we would also like to discuss a draft position... job description for an internship program. Are there any other items that you can think of now?
What I would like to have is a follow-up on the items that we have on the agenda for our strategic planning. Just where we are with some of those requests or ideas. And if we're not there yet, that's fine. Just let us know. And, you know, just kind of keep, I want to keep it alive.
I understand.
Go down the list. Check, check, check. Working on this. Okay. No longer an issue.
Sure.
Yes, sir.
On the railroad thing, I got a call and was told that an attorney from Jacksonville was going to send me a document to review. I think I got it yesterday. It's in my stack. People who know me, when I get emails, it's all printed out and then I put it in a basket to look at. I haven't had an opportunity to look at it. It's for me to comment on. I do that, a lot of that stuff on the weekends, so I'll take a look at it. But I want you to know that we did get a document that we're going to need to probably execute, and I'll look at it and make some comments to the fellow in Jacksonville. I can't remember his name, but we'll see.
I can't remember his name either.
I will later on remember it for y'all. I just want to let you know that's, you know, this thing is, you know, it kind of left us for a while, but it's mm-hmm. all in the works mm-hmm. now.
Okay.
Yippee.
Is that all?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you. Before we move on to item 25, I want to recognize our city manager, Taylor Brown, for being here today. Thank you for coming, and come anytime.
Thank you.
Okay, item 25. Comments and concerns from the public for non-agenda items. Do you have something you want to talk about for 3 minutes? Come forward. Okay, we'll move right on then.
to item number 26, board informational items. I'll start with you, Commissioner Murphy.
At the current time, I don't have any current information to bring to the table, but I do like to touch on what we talked about this bridge. I've only heard one person, and one person called and said that they wanted to keep the bridge. But we can't come to a decision until we hold a public hearing. So I was going to bring that up during that, but we decided to hold a public hearing, and that's what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
Anything else further? I don't have anything at this time.
Right. And like Ms. Pemberton said, they're going to get a cost analysis,
right,
you know, to see what it would take if we decided that we needed to replace
it.
Right. Okay, good.
Thank you.
Mr. Page.
I don't have anything. I will set the landfill board meeting scheduled for yesterday, 5 o'clock. Was canceled early in the morning. Couldn't get a quorum together. So I don't have anything to report from the landfill. Just want to thank everybody for being here. I want to thank the fellow commissioners. Very good meeting. Thank our chair. This fellow did a good job. Appreciate our attorney and our clerk. And that's all I have.
Commissioner Moody?
Thank everybody for being here. Me and Ms. Wanda has, she got the road department crew to video out in Spring Road down where all the construction takes place on the pipeline. And the lower part of past the prison on the road's taking a real beating with all that heavy equipment down there. So we got we got a video of the road before the construction started, and we kind of Highway 30 was called from Cemetery Road the same way. They're coming and going off it with all the heavy equipment, so we got a video of that, and I just want y'all to be aware of that.
That's our new road there.
Yeah. We trying to keep an eye on the maintenance that comes and goes on that, and so it is turning into a major, this weight as it is and much traffic as it is, the issue that we got an eye on. And we fixing to have a mosquito problem in Taylor County with all this water sitting here. So everybody needs to prepare for that. And I know I'm sure that Secretary and him getting ready for it. But it's fixing to be here. That's all I got.
Madam Clerk, Mr. Bishop?
The Taylor County versus Brooks hearing, final hearing on foreclosure. It's the April 4th and 5th. We're gonna have the hearing, there have been all kinds of accusations made in this particular case, but our instructions were to move on. We're going to move on with it and see what happens, see what the judge says in that particular instance.
May I ask this question? Will this thing be over April 4th, 5th? Or can you predict what's going to happen here?
My prediction is that it'll be finished at the trial level. Now, whether there's an appeal done or not in that particular instance, I don't know. I have my...
Well, I keep getting questions. What are y'all doing about this old house down here? It needs to go. And I can't disagree with that.
Oh, not at all.
But after this April 4th and 5th, then if the verdict comes or whatever the decision is made is adverse, then there's the right for this other party to appeal. And this can go on for 40 more years. I mean, use 40 loosely, for several more years.
Oh, I'm not going to last that long.
usually,
the only way you can to there's certain things I'm going to ask for, if we are successful, okay? I'm not going to divulge that at this particular point in time. All legitimate requests. But if there's an appeal, usually an appeal lasts about 18 months. And I think Amy will agree with that, because what happens is there's an appeal, and there's a time that you write your briefs. There's a time that the court considers it, and the court can grant oral arguments. My experience is that they don't grant oral arguments near what they used to do before the First District Court of Appeals. And if they don't, then they just come back and say, you know, they affirm what was done. The other problem in this particular instance is that, as you well know, it's, remember that this fellow, you know, filed a suit in Michigan, and, you know, there's all kinds of things that there may be other lawsuits, you know, as a practical matter. But as far as this particular instance is concerned, as far as getting a final judgment, hopefully we'll get one, you know, on the 4th and the 5th, an oral ruling, and then get a ruling.
And keep in mind, he doesn't have an attorney. He's doing all this stuff himself. And when it gets to the appeal level, and it gets to the district court, and it's not appropriate, they send us back something back. He's got so many days, and it's just a continuous process when it gets to the appeal. But and he'll appeal it, granted.
Yeah, but don't you have to, I mean, just because you appeal something, that doesn't necessarily mean that you'll get an appeal, right?
Well, you can appeal, doesn't mean that you'll get a ruling that's in your favor. Okay.
But you can still go through the process, though, mm-hmm. just because you don't like the outcome, because I appeal this and we have to go through it?
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, we're going to do everything we possibly can within the law to get this finished.
And okay. Is it a jury trial?
No, ma'am. It's for the judge. Hmm. What happened? Okay. Here's what happened. We filed suit, and there was a response, and it was a lengthy response, and the court determined that that was a counterclaim made by this gentleman. We asked for summary judgment and won that. Okay? That's out. He appealed that summary judgment, but it's not right to be appealed, so that appeal was dismissed. Now, so the issue that we are advocating is that the planning board code enforcement issued an order, gave an opportunity, and there's fines. And he's saying the fines were excessive. We're saying that they're not, because I'm not asking for, you know, all the way up to here. I'm asking for a certain amount. And so that's the issue in that is, and we, you know, we have asked the court to take judicial notice of the order. We filed an affidavit as to what's owed. We've also, we've got our ordinance, you know, that was passed. All those issues are appropriate in this particular instance. Now, there's a Supreme Court. Recently, the U.S. Supreme Court issued an opinion about excessive fines. But our position is our excessive fines are not excessive at all in this particular instance. So the court's going to listen to that. But it's a very narrow issue. The issue is, you know, there was a violation of the of our code. The other side says that the building was built pursuant to code. That's not the issue. It was built pursuant to code, but as time goes on, if you don't take care of it, you know, and everybody knows about the situation of the, I call them, the stilts that are on that are made out of, not made out of wood, and there are cracks all in it, and so forth, and then the boats there. So, and you know, our position is that there's been absolutely no attempt to, in fact, mm-hmm. rectify this. Mm-hmm. Do it. Mm-hmm. Okay? So, that's where we're at with that. And of course, I'm trying to keep y'all informed on that.
Appreciate what you're doing, thank you.
And, you know, there are all kinds of accusations against us and y'all.
Yeah,
well, okay.
Okay, well, thank you. That was the only thing that I had on my list to discuss that, so I'm glad you did it. But again, I appreciate everybody being here. I appreciate the board, us working together, and staff. Does any staff or anybody else have anything? Before we adjourn, I do want to say that as soon as we adjourn, then we're going to go right back into the board meeting. This is what it says. The board meeting will be recessed and will continue as a workshop during which Government Services Group, GSG, will present Taylor County Fire Assessment Study results. So that's, we're going to stay and immediately go into that. If there's nothing else, then there's going to be a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
We got a motion by Commissioner Moody, second by Commissioner McMurphy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Okay.
We have some documentation for the board. It is the fire assessment memorandum and the schedule. If the board chooses to approve this assessment.
Right.
Yes, sir.
We have the PowerPoint. I'll say a hard copy, it's not a hard copy of the presentation. So, this is getting messed up now. But I'm Jeff Rack, the Government Services Group. I was here, this has been about 2 years ago when we initially did a study for the fire assessment. So basically, what we're showing here is all the same information we had 2 years ago. We didn't update the study or anything. We weren't asked to. We're just kind of refreshing your memory on everything and walking back through the calculations, the study. I believe you have some new board members, so if there's any questions along the way, feel free to stop and we can answer any of those questions. But basically, we just wanted to get you the information and just refresh your memory and give you the opportunity to ask some questions that you might have. So.
It's okay. We can do it from here.
Okay. So basically, a fire assessment is just a charge against real property paid for fire services. Fire services and not EMS services is really the key there. So fire suppression, hazmat, fire prevention, anything up to level fire first responder services. So we're not talking about any type of transport or advanced life support services, any type of actual EMS services at all. So we're only talking about fire services. Case law requirements are that there's a special benefit to property. The courts have said that fire services up to first responders do provide that benefit to property, whereas EMS services don't. That's why we're only including fire services, and that there's a fair and reasonable proportionate. So it has to be logical, factually driven, you know, based on the services being provided, the different types of properties, has to make sense in terms of those services being provided. So with fire services, this methodology we're using, as you'll see, we go through there, it's been court tested and approved, makes sense, courts have determined it's fair and reasonable, and then finally, legislative determination receives judicial deference, so any actions this board makes will receive judicial deference. The methodology we used here for this study was the historic demand methodology.
as I said, court tested and approved. It's been around in the state for 20 plus years, most widely adopted around the state. Historical demand is a driving factor. When we talk about historic demand, we're talking about historic fire calls for services to different property types. It is based on the initial response, so all calls are treated equally, and there is one rate for single family residential structures regardless of size, and you'll see that. So it's a per dwelling unit rate, whereas your non-residential properties are based on their square footage. When we're going through the study, we look at a number of different data components or different types of information. First, we're looking at service delivery, so we want to make sure we're looking at the right service area. So in this case, the unincorporated area. We're looking at the actual services being provided so that we make sure we're only including the fire first responder portion of those and not any potential EMS services. If we're dealing with a fully consolidated department, then we go through a process to split out those EMS costs. The budget we looked at was the 16-17 budget. That's what we were looking at when we were here 2 years ago. That's what everything in here is based on above. You'll see the numbers when we walk through this. It did include some service enhancements. Like I said, we didn't update anything on the budget from then. You'll also see it's 100% budget. So when you see the budget, you see the rates. They may look high to you, but keep in mind that's the maximum amount you could assess up to. You could assess for anything under that amount, but we're just walking through the calculation with the highest potential dollar amounts, just so you can see everything, how the calculations work. The call data of historic demand, we use 2016 calendar year data. Once again, that's what this is based on. We didn't update that at all. And then the property data that we used as well was the data from 2 years ago, Mary. Most of that stuff hasn't changed much anyways, or not enough to probably look at it again. Of course, we would be glad to do a whole new study for you if you wanted us to, but I don't think that would be very cost effective for some very minor changes that you'd like to see at this point anyways. On the budget, you can see a little bit of a breakdown there. This was And the chief can probably talk to this, but with some added personnel, added capital expenditures in there, and kind of I wouldn't say a fully loaded budget, but this wasn't just your baseline budget that you were looking at. You can see the total expenditures, $2,175,056, and then the additional assessment expenditures that we added on there. With collection costs for the tax collector to put the assessment on the tax bill and collect that, statutory discount for early payments, non-collection or under-collection. The study costs, which was the actual study costs at the time, were included in there. And then the estimated notice costs, and we'll talk about notices in a minute, but that's kind of an estimated number. And what we try to do is include all those additional costs that you're paying because they are recoverable under the fire assessment as well. Of course, any additional costs you include increase your rates as well. So that's something to keep in mind when you're looking at the rates and the different scenarios we provide. You can see that bottom line number, the total assessable expenditures at $2,380,169. That's the budget that the rates are calculated on when we look on these next few slides. The cost apportionment you can see from that chart, this is just your calls for service broken down into the different categories. You can see residential 77%, institutional 4%, industrial warehouse 5.63%, commercial 13.33%. Pretty standard breakdown of what we see, you know, around the state. Normally, residential is, you know, the highest, large number of properties. They require the largest number of calls for services, usually somewhere between 60 and 80%, give or take. usually commercial second, and then industrial warehouse institutional, just depending on the makeup, you know, the types of properties we're talking about are usually a little bit lower. But pretty standard, what we see everywhere else, nothing surprising there. So what we use that information for is to take that budget, that $2,308,169 assessable budget, and allocate that to the different property categories based on their percentage of the fire calls for service. So you can see residential was 231 out of the 300 calls, 77%, so therefore residential, that residential category as a whole would be responsible for 77% of that assessable budget, as you can see there. You can see the same things for the other categories as a whole, paying their fair share of that assessable budget. Of course, if you lower that budget any amount, those proportions would always stay the same. You just, you know, allocate that budget based on those same proportions. So you couldn't allocate more to commercial or residential to try to get a particular rate down. You can lower the budget overall to lower all the rates, but you can't pick and choose specific categories that you want to lower or allocate less of those costs to. The rates, and we kind of mentioned this, but the residential category is based on dwelling unit. So for a single family home, it's one dwelling unit, a duplex, two dwelling units. If you have an apartment complex with 50 apartments, that's 50 dwelling units. A mobile home, one dwelling unit.
RVs are included in this?
RVs are included, so RVs can't be treated as, or RVs and RV parks specifically can't be treated as residential property, they're treated as commercial property.
What about the other RVs that are not in parks?
So it kind of depends on if they're permanent structures tied to the property. So if they're in the property appraiser's data, they may be included. If they're not, they might not be. The one caveat there is that we did include, and I think you'll see on the next slide, about 1,850 RV hunting camp dwellings that have been identified at that time. So they were included as residential. These are not in parks, these are separate units that we didn't identify. I believe we got that list from the property appraiser's office. Okay, so they maintain a list of those.
So that 1,800 is part of this 9,210.
Yes, you're on the next slide, but yes, that's right.
They were counted as being improved property.
No, excuse me.
Go ahead.
Of the 9,210 billing units for residential, do you have a feel for how many of those have exemptions so that they pay zero MSTU?
Half of them?
25%?
No, I don't know.
Most of them? You have a feel for that?
Zero, I'd say it's probably
almost all of them.
No, I wouldn't think that many don't pay anything. But I don't know. I mean, it's something you'd have to look at.
I don't even know what percentage is, but I know there are a lot of houses that are set very low.
Yeah, there's a lot
that don't pay any property taxes.
Yeah.
And all they pay is the $140 garbage and stuff. They pay anything towards fire service.
Yeah, I mean, there's a good number of them. Percentage wise, I don't know that it would be the majority of them, but it's, I mean, it's probably a good number, especially here compared to some other parts of the state, yeah. Because you know property values are lower, and so there's, I guess the point would be you are picking up some of those properties that aren't contributing to fire services by using an assessment.
I'd like to know, you know, somebody has to know that. Have that information. Now, what about,
I'm checking.
Okay.
The tax collector.
What about this? I know there are a lot of places where people have put up storage sheds, and people are actually living in them. So there may be a home there, and then right over there on the same property is a storage shed that is being converted to a home.
So once again, it depends on how the property appraiser is treating that. If it's a dwelling unit and the property appraiser is treating it as a dwelling unit, it'll be included. If it's an illegal, unpermitted structure that's being used as a dwelling unit or a living unit, it's not going to show up on the property appraiser's roll.
Can we find out from Bruce if he, how's he counting those, or if he's counting those?
I just texted Mark, so.
Yeah, so we're relying on the property appraiser data. So whatever they have, that's generally what we're using. There may be a few exceptions, some overrides. There are, the board also has the ability to say, well, we don't like them not including X, Y, or Z, so we want to include those in here. Or we don't want to treat these properties the same way they're treating them for whatever reason, but generally what we're doing is relying on their data. So if they say there's one dwelling unit there, it's one dwelling unit. If they say there's two and they're including that shed, barn, whatever it might be, we're going to include that. So it just depends on what they're including in their data. The one key exception would be those RV hunting camp dwellings. That we have included those, and a decision was made in 2 years ago to include those in the numbers, because they are using fire services, there are calls for services, and there's a substantial number of them out there, and they were able to be identified at that time.
But, Lamonda, do you know, for the people that may fall or ask for a waiver for the low income, what we were just talking about, is do you know the process for that? Do they have to show proof of income, or?
I believe there is a vetting process they go through with the tax collector in order to receive a waiver. We ran into that with our solid waste tags and stickers that we were handing out. So they have their own separate process to show proof. I think if they're a widow or a vet, or if there is a low income waiver, there's a process they go through in Mark's office.
But this is at the discretion of the board.
Well, so
I think when we set up the solid waste, the board had to approve some ordinance, I suppose.
Well, you
to allow those waivers.
Yeah, and you approved them. The waivers, and that's the way it used to be,
yeah,
with regard to this special assessment on the garbage.
I think they use the poverty guidelines as an enforcement. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you could do something similar for the fire assessment if you chose to do so. Set up some criteria for low income seniors is one we've seen. I've seen several different ones, but it's something you could do. Is set up some kind of hardship program for certain individuals that may be experiencing hardship to not burden them with a fire assessment. Of course, anything you do with that is lost revenue for.
Well, they have to transfer from their reserve, which would cover that loss.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, and it's cost to the rest of the folks.
Yeah. That's right. Yes. Somebody's paying.
Somebody's got to pay.
That's right.
You got to be consistent.
Yeah, of course.
Extremely consistent.
Yeah. And you want to be careful, too, with some of those exemptions. I think a low-income one or a low-income senior exemption where they own the property and they meet certain standards, as far as their income and they're below that level, you apply that consistently, I think you're fine. When you start branching out from there, and it gets kind of iffy on some of those exemptions, that is definitely an option that you could explore. And as you said, that's something you would adopt if you implement the program. during that implementation process in your legal documents, you include something for a hardship exemption.
May I ask a question? There are a number of those 9,200 billing units for residential that don't pay any EMS taxes. Pay nothing for fire service.
Correct.
I think about a hybrid approach. If you already pay an MSD tax on your house, which is primarily fire, can you implement this uniform assessment just to those properties that don't pay anything?
No. You could use a combination of the two. So some assessment amount, keep your MSDU or lower it a certain amount, put in an assessment that's, you know, $50 and the corresponding non-residential rates.
So I'm already paying a sizable tax bill.
Right.
You add another 50 to me. Just to get 50 from a poor person. That's double taxing the guy that's already paid for the MSDU.
That's right.
And you could take the MSDU to zero and just do an assessment. My point was just that you can use those two different funding mechanisms jointly. So
if you do away with the MSDU, you can go fully to the assessment list, uniform assessment list. Then what you're doing is you're eliminating the cost of fire services from your welfare people, your bigger companies, your Georgia Pacifics, and your natural gas people that comes in to pay big tax bills. The Trout County Electric, and Duke Energy, and all that, they don't pay much if you eliminate that. And you pass it all on to the poor people.
Yeah,
and that's more aggressive.
I don't know if that's entirely true because they're still paying on any structures they have here. And
no, I'm not the MSTU tax.
What I'm trying to say is that on the MSTU, everybody's tax is the same village rate. And if you change it to this, you might be putting more of a burden on the residential than commercial because their tax may be lower. Is that what you're trying to say?
It might
be lower for the special assessment, and they don't pay as much as they do with it.
It might be. I don't know that that's necessarily true, but it might be. And it's probably a property-by-property case you could look at because, as you say, exemptions do play into that as well.
But that's what the apportionment method is all about, is you're taking the volume of your calls, and you're distributing or you're assigning a value based upon the way the calls are answered. So if 77% of the calls are to residential areas, then 77% of the burden would come from the residential areas.
Yeah, that's right. As opposed to some made up taxable value number with a bunch of different exemptions and it doesn't really have a correlation with the services being provided. It's a valid way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not, can't directly tie the provision of fire services to taxable value. So any other questions on that? Okay.
Now to implement this, if I agree with you correctly, it's going to cost some cost involved.
Yeah, let me run through these other slides and we'll get to that.
Okay. Cost of doing this, 200 something thousand.
No.
No.
But so on that slide we were on, as you already mentioned, that so we've taken that budget and divided by the billing units.
Mm-hmm.
The 9210 there, we said includes those hunting camp RV dwelling units. Your maximum per dwelling unit rate of $199. That's an annual rate. And then you can just see your commercial, industrial, warehouse, and institutional rates. Those are per square foot rates.
Mm-hmm.
The next slide, basically what we're trying to show you is the estimated buy downs for institutional tax exempt and our government exempt properties. Those are two common exemptions that we see around the state. The government is one of those things that you really can't collect from government. A lot of it's probably your own property anyway, so it wouldn't really make sense to try to collect that money from yourself. You know, it's something you could try to do and send separate bills to the governmental entities and try to collect. It's probably not worth the effort, especially given, like I said, that a lot of that property is probably your own property. So as you can see, the government portion of the assessment based on the governmental properties, their use, square footage, is about $76,000. That's money that would have to be made up through some other legally available revenue source. The institutional tax exempt properties are a little bit different. You can absolutely charge them an assessment. You can put it on the tax bill. You can enforce collection. The issue there is that most of those properties aren't currently paying ad valorem taxes. So it's your churches, your not-for-profit institutions, those types of organizations. You can choose to exempt them. That's really a board decision. You could also choose to partially exempt them. So if you wanted them to pay something, but felt like they provide the community with certain services that you would otherwise have to provide or would have to be made up elsewhere, there's some benefit to those organizations, you fully exempt them, or, you know, 50%, 70%, 80%, whatever kind of exemption you want to grant them. Most of our clients around the state do exempt those institutional tax exempt type properties, and that's why we've included it here. So total, you're looking at about $150,000 in exemptions if you choose to exempt government and institutional tax exempt. So that was really the key here that we wanted to show you, but that is a board decision. So that's a policy decision you would make moving forward as you're implementing the program if you decide to do so. The next slide was really just to give you some other rate options, and I believe the chief kind of has a budget, or he kind of has identified what he would cut out under these different options. If you didn't go with the full $199, you went with that scenario 2 at $195, scenario 3 at $185, or scenario 4 at $177. You can see the rates there, the gross revenue, the exemption amounts, net revenue, and then we're showing you the net revenue at 95% there. These are just a few scenarios. As I said, you have the option to fund anything up to $199. And, you know, that could be a $1 assessment, a $50 assessment. You know, it's really up to you, and it's up to you how you choose to couple that with the MSTU. It's, you know, those are two different funding mechanisms that you can use together or choose one or the other. It's really the board's call on that. As long as you're not overfunding the fire department. So if your budget's $1 million, you can't collect $1 million from the MSTU and $1 million from the fire assessment. You know, that could cause you some problems. But if your budget's $1 million and you collect $500,000 from each of them, shouldn't be an issue going that route. As far as the implementation schedule, which is on the next page, and this is kind of a draft that, you know, the board would have to make some decisions on exactly when they want to do some things. So we're here March 19th. You would adopt an assessment ordinance, which March, April, May, I mean, even into June or July if you had to. So there's not necessarily a firm deadline to get that done. I would say the earlier the better, and it has to be done prior to the initial assessment resolution is really the key there. So you can't move forward in the process without adopting that ordinance. They technically could be done on the same day. That wouldn't necessarily be a problem, but you do have to adopt both of those. After the ordinance, the initial assessment resolution, which that basically lays out the program, the proposed rates that you're going to adopt and triggers the mailing of notices to all property owners. Those notices would be mailed, and then at least 20 days after that, you'd have a public hearing to adopt a final assessment resolution, which basically sets your final rates, which could be anything up to those rates you included in the initial resolution in the mail notice. So basically, kind of like with your millage in that initial document, you're setting your maximum rates, and then you can come back and lower those rates at the final. You can't go above what you've previously adopted and noticed. And then by September 15th, certify the fire assessment roll to the tax collector, and then tax bills mailed November 1st. The costs associated with this at this point, I think we had in our initial contract, I want to say it was $7,500 or something along those lines to assist with implementation, and we would still honor that as well. If you wanted us to assist with that, the only other costs would be mailing notices, which we can do, or I don't know if you could do that internally or have someone else do it, possibly. I think we figured that would be somewhere around $10,000 or $11,000 for the mailing of the notices.
Yeah.
You could possibly use the trim notice as opposed to mailing notices. There could be some issues there. If you do use a trim notice, then you're on a little bit of a different schedule, so you're on whatever schedule property grader kind of set for everything. There may be some legal information that's not on the trim notice, which may have to be included on the trim notice, or there may have to be some kind of insert included. So that may or may not be a valid option. I don't know, it's just something you have to look into. So there's a cost there. I don't know, there may be some additional legal costs depending on who you have draft the necessary legal documents for implementation. That's something to think about as well. Any of those costs would be recoverable through the assessment potentially. So basically where you're at now is where you were 2 years ago, deciding if this is something you want to do. If so, what level of funding or what rates, and then any exemptions, specifically the institutional tax exempt and government parcels. Also, if a hardship exemption or anything along those lines is something you want to look at, that would be something that you would want to be considering. And it would have to be detailed in your legal documents, and you're adopting those as well. So that's all I have. Questions for me about the process or the numbers or anything else to do with the assessment program?
Any questions from the board?
Your estimated next cost won't go up because postage is going up since you did the study.
I think they may go up slightly. I think we estimated a little bit high too. We won't know exactly until we know, the number of exempt properties depending on the exemption you're doing. So if we're not going to notice them, of course, if there's new construction, we have to pull that in. So I don't have a firm number on the notices. I don't think it's going to go up a lot though. I mean, they may go up slightly, but it's not, it's not going to be $20,000 or $30,000.
Okay. I guess what I'd like to know is, to see a comparison of where we are right now, mm-hmm. as compared to where we would be, and as of the present time that we're using the 1 cent sales tax to enhance our fire department. That's the information I'd like to see. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Are you asking with the three scenarios that has been, have been presented.
Yeah.
Where that would take us compared to
where
that
would take us as compared to right now, and the fact that we have the 1 cent sales tax that we're using to enhance the department. Because, I mean, I'm not, I just can't jump up from here and say, I'm ready to do this. I have to see some more stuff.
If I can add on to that, the 1 cent sales tax is helping us. There's no doubt about it. And if in this slide you show the yellow line for capital, we've gone through and taken that part out because the 1 cent is there now. But the problem is, like, so we've got the new equipment and stuff, but it's not giving us the personnel. The operational cost that the 1 cent sales tax can't help us with, that's what this is, what we're looking for help on. Like, as far as the capital items, we are getting that help from the 1 cent sales tax. Like I said, we talked about the new fire truck earlier. But like I said, staffing and operational costs over.
Explain to us then how critical your needs are now in terms of operational costs.
I think what we've provided in the past, we're looking for the big enhancements we're looking for is to have a second person in Skeen Hatchie, where we have a single firefighter down a good 40-45 minute drive time, depending on where we're coming from, whether they're by themselves. So that would give us a two person crew down there. That position that we just put on for Keaton Beach that's currently Monday through Friday, it lets us turn that to 24-hour staffing. And then short of that, it gives us a fire inspector type position.
So it's enhanced, it's added coverage down at the beaches. I think we determined with the assessment of 177.
It would be covered.
That would cover 177, which would bring your budget to 1.8 million. That's an additional almost 600,000. $500,000 to $600,000. That would give you the second firefighter position in Skeen Hatchie, the 24/7 staffing at the beaches, and a full-time fire inspector.
The reason it's so expensive is because we save one position, but it's for 24-hour coverage, so there's multiple shifts we have to fill. One position is actually three people.
Right.
So that's why it's more expensive.
I've got a question.
Sure.
A worry that I would have is, and do you have any of your clients that had the study done and then used a study that was 2 years old without updating it?
Yes.
You have done that? What county does that, if you recall? Because that's a worry to me as the board's attorney.
Well, so
I don't want to have a lawsuit on that. You understand what I'm saying, y'all?
So generally what we recommend and what the attorneys we work with recommend is updating these every 5 years or so.
Really?
So normally the implementation is either that year or sometimes the following year. Every once in a while there's one that hangs out there for another year or two. Okay. They decide to go forward with it. I don't think it's a big issue in this case because it's not, I don't think a lot's changed in the last 2 years since we looked at this. Property composition hasn't changed. The call volume isn't going to be substantially different. We don't have a new, you know, huge development of 1,000 homes somewhere that's going to really shake numbers up. We haven't taken on a new service area. So if you were now providing services to the city, I would probably say you need to look at this.
Yeah. I just think of somebody jumping on that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm really super against the assessment.
There's always a risk. And you would still have a risk even if you've just done the study. I think it would. Would it be better to have a brand new study? I mean, I think it. From a legal standpoint, it'd probably be better to update it every year. I mean, I don't think that
would be hardly feasible, though.
That's kind of my point is, could you do a whole new study? Yeah, like I said, we can do it. I don't think the numbers are going to change at all. The rates might change a dollar here or there, a penny here or there. Just not going to.
Maybe I'm overthinking, but I was just concerned.
Yeah.
And I'm not advocating by any stretch. I'm just
Just asking if you had anybody that had that problem.
I think what I'd like to do is hear from the, well, we'll hear from the public first. I was going to say hear from the board. We'll hear from the public. So if you want to come forward and speak to us.
And I'm going to ask a question.
And the property appraisers, or excuse me, the tax collectors on the side of it as well.
Okay.
Thanks.
Well, I'll save my question for him.
I've not seen this before, and I just wanted to clarify. That $199 for residential, where it could vary depending which scenario they use, is that in addition to what we're already being taxed for?
No, the MSTU portion of your taxes would be reduced. And then the $195 or the $177, or if the board adopts this, then that would be, that would take its place, basically.
Percentage amount would it increase?
It depends, right.
Okay, so.
Thank you.
And homestead exemption, things like that. So if someone has homestead exemption and it falls under the $50,000 and they don't pay anything into the MSTU now, then they would be assessed the $177 or the $195 or whatever.
What about the lots that have 2, 3, 4 acres on it?
Well, then I would say
you have one property owner who's got 3 or 4 acres.
If I heard correctly, if they're all considered residential units, I would assume it would be the same type assessment as we do for solid waste.
The land and the property owner is the only one getting assessed. You've got 3 or 4 other campers on there, so I'm saying.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's an issue bothering me. Can I go ahead and ask?
Sure, go ahead. Arthur, you can look at your tax bills, bullets, yeah. And I think the MSTU is separate from it.
So I know, but what I'm understanding is this will be separated out from.
Okay, if you look at what your MSTU assessment was, compare that amount to someone's tax bill with $199.
Okay.
That it should give you the difference if there is a difference.
Ms. Sandbanks, if I'm one of these property owners that don't pay any property tax, I get a tax bill that says you owe zero. And if we were to implement the $177 or the $199 or some number, and then I get a tax bill that says you owe a fire assessment, so $199, I can just throw that in the trash because you can't collect it.
You're right. It's not like the solid waste. It becomes a lien on the property. And at the end of every 7 years, it drops off.
It drops off.
Yeah. So that those people who homestead and don't pay any tax at all.
They don't pay this.
She said Mark was coming. He can tell you about how many of those. Those assessments are on your tax bill. They go out. And if you don't come in and pay it, you're not required to file for a tax deed on that. And we don't have anybody that does a tax deed on a special assessment. Then it just stays on the tax roll for the 7 years. Every 7 years, it just drop off.
This thing has too many unanswered questions for me to make a decision today on.
And those property guidelines, I can get a copy of the statutes. There, when somebody files for indigency for the court system, it's 200% less of the property guidelines. So we have to go in and figure what 200% is so we know what their income is. But the income in there is fairly high for the property guidelines. I don't remember exactly, but I'll get you a copy of them so you'll know what the statute says the property guidelines are.
Yeah.
But it's set in there, one person to go down to the families, and so there's so many of them kill you, I'll figure that
out. I would doubt that somebody like me, I got a house up here in this cup. I pay a pretty good chunk of property taxes. But if you look at that little line item for MSTU, that's a very little bit of rate. I doubt I'd pay $199 in the MSTU. So if you implement this, first I think we're all going to see an increase.
Oh, I don't mind the increase for the services. I'm just saying that everybody should pay it.
Well, the statute doesn't allow for any exemptions. The board has to go through your ordinance to allow that to happen.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's just such a
complicated manner,
you know. It's, we were thinking that, you know, we need coverage at the beach for all the homes down there that catch on fire now, they're going to burn down to the ground. They're going to burn up your neighbors too. And so, I mean, you know, there is a need there for staffing and to provide services. In Steinhatchee, where you've got one person working alone, that I don't see how you get by with that.
You can't go in a house and get on fire, sure.
I mean, what do you do if you call it, you get the house is burned down, you got one person, you just let it burn down? What do you do?
Well, that's where we got to make decisions on the fly and heat of the moment. There are exceptions to our rules. If we show up to a fire, the firefighter has that decision to make that if it's fully involved, he doesn't have to go in by law with two in, two out, I mean, for his safety. But if there is, if he feels he can immediately save a life, so say there's a child and they can hear, you know, in a window, they can make that decision, and that's what we do. I mean, that's...
He's going in.
But...
He's going in.
And that's where, if we had that second person there, now there's two people, you know, he's in a much safer place. If we have this other position to keep beach that's 24-hour coverage now, along with our volunteer that's down there, we've got, you know, more people. You know, and it's not taking us as long to get to Steinhatchee or from Steinhatchee to Keaton Beach. And it sounds like, you know, we're only talking about the coastal region, but there's a benefit to it countywide. We're using those areas because that's where our numbers are the worst as far as raising call volume and lack of help. But by putting staffing in those areas, our main crew at Station 1 isn't having to go to that side of the county as much. We're leaving that crew available for the rest of the county to have a quicker response time. So it's not just it's only going to benefit one area. This is going to benefit countywide. And if you remember the fuel truck rollover the other day, we were on that scene for 10 hours. That was me and every firefighter I had, and we were there all day long. We had to pull our Steinhatchee truck into town, so we had one truck for countywide response. With that one firefighter. Because we were talking
in my house.
Yeah, I've got two questions. One is the area in the west where you've got Osceola and all of those that have no protection now, basically. And then in the case like last, when you had the rollover, will other counties come in and assist us? Do they do that? Yeah, or are they in the same situation?
We provide information with our surrounding counties. Steinhatchee, Dixie County, for an example. Dixie County, they're coming from Cross City, so they're a little ways away. But we do assist them. We'll go into Gina. They'll come into Steinhatchee.
What about Jefferson?
We work with that. When we're up 19-221, we'll get not so much for Jefferson there and more around the Monticello area, so we don't get a lot of help from them, but Madison will pull their volunteer services over for us from time to time, but honestly, we do probably more assisting them than they do for us, just because they don't have people either. And then the Nunnell Rise and Casino area, that's really nothing down there on the neighboring counties either, because that would be the Jefferson County, more or less, from that area, and they're coming from Monticello.
Okay, so if you've got, say for instance, somebody that is, say they live on Powell Hammock Road somewhere, or out Mandalay, and so if we say the assessment would be just $199, but yet if we don't have anybody up there to fight their fire, we're going to get a lot of resistance. So what is the plan for that end of the county? I hear you say about 24-hour coverage at the beaches, but what about up there? What is your plan?
It really comes down to where that number falls. If you move forward with this, or whether you raise the MSU rate, whatever the board would decide, I can have the plan, but you know, I mean, we're right now, like I said, just to get to stop the bleeding that we have now, is where that 177 mark, that, what is it, 1.87, that gives those problems. So if we wanted to address the down 98 area, we could. I can get you a number for that.
If I was assessed that and I didn't have any services, I wouldn't pay it.
I would, my recommend, you know, because of the call volume down there, because it is so low, I wouldn't say that's the sort of thing, but we start off with that Monday through Friday type position. But, or we could, and like I said, because it's more fiscally responsible, there's a lot of options that we could look at. If you want to bring those numbers forward of what it would take, we can. It's just, and that's one of those things as far as making it fast response. If our crews are all in Steinhatchee, Keaton Beach, somewhere else in the county, they're having to respond from that really far away to get to Eagan.
So if this is something that we decided to do, then yeah, I want a firm plan. How are we going to cover also that area up there?
We've got two little interesting volunteer fire department.
But there's nobody, we don't have an active...
we have two volunteers currently down there.
Charles Missy's 80 bucks, there's something.
So I mean, they're that kind of drive there.
They're essentially drivers, they drive the truck source. They shuttle work for us.
So, I mean, I that's my district, part of it, and part of it's yours.
Right.
But, I mean, I want to know, if we do this, how are we going to cover those people?
I would love to see us put some level of, even if it's, you know, some level of current staffing in all of our stations.
Correct.
It's just, it's an expensive price tag. And like I said, I would love to do that. I would love to provide you that service. Like if you gave me that, you'd be amazed what I could give you. Because I think we're pretty happy with the fire service we have now, and like I said, we can do better. But it's whether or not you're comfortable with that.
Yeah, but I'm going to have a hard time voting on something where a lot of my people up there have no services, and they're going to be asked to pay, but they have no services. So you know, I'm representing them right now. I want to, you know, we have to have something in place for everybody.
Just to throw some numbers out at everyone to kind of keep it in perspective, the difference between a $177 assessment and a $195 assessment is $150,000.
Let's say you did the one. I can easily go back and work the budget for you and say, okay, theoretically that leaves us station two, station three, station 8 and station 4 that won't have any staff. I could go back and say, okay, even if it's just one person, how much would it cost to put one person? But on average, you're looking for one person, it's about $180,000 a year.
So the difference between scenario 2 and scenario 4 would be the difference between approximately between 177 and 195. And you know, to keep in mind as well, if this is a hard pill to swallow and you want to enhance fire services, if you increase your MSTU by half a mil, that would generate about $600,000. So we don't have to do the assessment. It just depends on, number one, does the board want to increase fire protection services, and number two, how do we get from point A to point B?
Okay, well, again, you know, for me to be able to sell this to my constituents, I got to let them know what they're paying for.
Sure.
You know, okay?
Sure.
And so you're paying like this. This is what you're going to get for your money.
Right.
Otherwise, I can't support it.
I understand. And it may be the difference. We may say, okay, well, maybe we can live without a fire inspector, and maybe we can add a full-time position at, you know, on this side of town. I think we can work several different scenarios, but what staff is looking for is some guidance from the board. Do we continue with the process we're on now as far as do we continue with the fire assessment? As if the board is going to adopt this ordinance.
And if we don't, then it's the same old. My people up in the western part are still going to have no services. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I've heard that since for the last almost 10 years. You know, their insurance is higher, but the main thing, if the house catches on fire, it burns down. And again, I know the beaches is, you know, the same thing. So again, it's not easy and it's not cut and dry. We have some needs, and we've got to make a decision if we're going to have people to pay for it or if we're going to do without it. that's what it comes down to.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, either if you get it, you gotta pay for it. If you, so that's very difficult.
It's, and I would actually have a question for Commissioner Murphy, if you don't mind. You've seen with the Keaton Beach Station, we've invested a little bit of money there. I mean, I think you told me in the past you've had feedback from the public as far as were they okay with us investing in the fire service. I mean, I don't know if you could.
Well, it was a positive note. It was noticeable. And the question I have for you is, how many fire stations do we have in this county?
7.
How many people do you need to fully staff each and every one?
If we were, say, to increase one man at every station?
To get you to par level. But I'm serious about this.
The par level would be at least 2 people at every station.
Okay. So you need 14 people.
Well, we'd have 2 at station 2, station 3, station 4. One more, or 2 at station 6. So we'd need 9.
9.
Times 3. It takes 3 persons.
So it would be 3 people.
7 more, 5 fires.
That would give, instead of having where there's only one person off by themselves, that would give you, in addition to our volunteer presence, and that's one of the things that we look at, you know, saying, you know, that's the best case scenario. But say Shady Grove, where we do have a volunteer corps there still. Or then we have 3 or 4 that's still on the roster. You could probably put one person there, because this way we'd have volunteers backing them up. Ecofini, that's a whole nother area. Keaton Beach is one of those where we have one, you know, one volunteer right now. Steenhatchee, we don't have any. So, you know, that's one of those where we, you know, the perfect world scenario is, yeah, put the 2 or 3 people at every station, but it might not be fiscally responsible. We might have to look at it and say, the station 2 and 3 only need one person because we have a volunteer pool there. It's, you know, do we need to have 2 paid people at every station?
Well, how about just like, you know, say at Ecofini and some of the other areas, if we could build our volunteer fire department by altering some sort of incentive, some sort of pay, maybe it's, I know other counties do that, because
yes.
When we go to these meetings, you know, you talk to other commissioners and you ask questions like this, and I've heard a bunch of them say, yeah, we do supplement volunteers.
It's a very tricky area to deal with. Mm-hmm. Kind of what, you know, he's going to talk about Mr. Messi and Mr. Efforts down there. The community is a little bit older. Not to say that we don't want their help. You know, like I said, everybody has a purpose, you know, that they know about. But there's a reason that most of your firefighters are 20-year-olds. it's a lot of work. It's a lot of heavyweight. And there's the community down there really doesn't have that many. And one, it's a limited population. And it is an older population.
Right.
That's it. But if they want to come help out, I'm more than happy to have them. But we have to run them through the same training that a 20-year-old has to go through.
There's not a lot of young folks down there.
So, and that's part of our problem with our volunteer. And like I said, we've made a lot of efforts to try to gain on more volunteers. And that's kind of where we are now, saying we need to start offsetting our volunteers with some more paid staffing. Not saying we need to quit on it, you know, maybe giving it a little bit of incentive might help us retain some of our volunteers, but I think the nominal fund that we would give them wouldn't be, you know, enticing. You know, a lot of our younger people that we say, you want to be a volunteer, they say, sure, how much does it pay? That's volunteer.
You know, that's just the way it is these days. Yes,
just a question. Do you have to know how many full-time firefighters there are within the city of Taylor?
Career-wise? I mean, with the city fire department?
Yes.
I believe the city manager's right there, but we believe you should have 12, don't you?
12?
We have 4-man crews.
And 3 shifts.
And 3 shifts.
Mm-hmm. So is there any way possible that the
more
county can
consolidate?
Consolidate so that they can rotate?
That's above my pay grade.
We've been talking about it several times, and I mean, that's something that I wouldn't mind hearing more about. What would be the advantages and what would be the disadvantages of consolidating? I mean, if it would improved services than what?
In my opinion, since all the firemen would be trained in all areas of the whole county, because this county is huge, and you know that, running the roads.
Very, very much.
And a guy or girl that works this area may never work that area.
But there is.
Rotating them.
I will say to that point that, I mean, there's definitely room for benefit there, but if there was a merger, we would still be doing the same job we're currently doing. If there's fires in the city, our county units already mutually automatically respond to all the city fires. And that gives us their crew plus our crew. Anything within 5 miles of the city, they usually send a truck to come help us. So we could reposition, we could make some improvements, we can maybe say let's move some stations and let's organize a little bit differently. But it doesn't add to the problem, we're still short. Even if with a merger countywide, we would still be short. I mean, like I said, that would help us with the around the city more so, but not so much with the outline.
Well, yeah,
it might mean that we don't have to hire on as many, but I think even if you did walk down that road, you would still have to do some sort of improvement.
Well, the city's covered, and you say 5 miles out, but if that doesn't cover also and the beaches. And
that's, like I said, we've got
that's what we're talking
1,200
about.
Square miles of county to cover, and we have, like I said, our right now our paid crews, we have one that goes 1,200 square miles worth of coverage. We have one crew, and that's why with this new truck, we designed it to make it more efficient for that crew, because they're in a tight spot, and plus the one in Steen Hatch.
Mr. Moody.
Several years ago, a volunteer fireman told me, he said, really what you need on the south end of the county, if you need a fire station halfway between the beach and Steen Hatch, you need 24/7 fire station halfway between the beach and Steen Hatch. That way you wouldn't have to have two fire stations, one at the beach and one at Steen Hatch. And he said you need an ambulance right there too. You need an ambulance and a fire truck at a station right there on the highway halfway between the two. And you cut your time down, it cut time in half either way. And he said that was his ideal of the best way to do the south end of the county.
I would warn against that, especially with our Steen Hatch area right now. At least they have a fire truck and they can have it, and they're usually there within 5 minutes. And then you'd say let's extend that out to 20.
Add another 5 minutes.
Well, it probably is greater than that. I would say if you were in the middle point, you would probably have at least a 15-minute response.
Either way, you go.
So. Versus right now, we have the fire station in each area. I see where you would be coming from.
King Beach right now, though, is 30 minutes. You might as well say, there's no way to volunteer.
Which is why, like I said, where we put that with the Safer Grant, where we're putting that money to try to, you know, to offset our volunteers a little bit down there. And if we had the funding, we would put it for 24-hour coverage.
But if you don't have a 24-hour, you need an ambulance there too. What the gentleman told me, he said it would save a lot of people's lives in that area.
And that's just having the fire truck, because our people are at bare minimum EMT certified. We have oxygen, AED, med supplies. We fully expect that we're going to be first responding to a lot of med calls in the Pete Beach area, because it's a 20-25 minute ride for either ambulance to get down there. We're going to save lives with that truck down. I'll say that without hesitation.
He said you need to cross train firemen with EMT in this county, and you could serve a big purpose like on the south end of the county. We have to get a cross train firefighter down to EMT and have one station. He said it cut the time in half.
Yeah, well, I think that's right. It would help out Keaton Beach. If I lived in Steen Hatch, in our scenarios, to have the beach area fire station and then the one at Steen Hatch. Because Steen Hatch is a lot of people down there.
Oh, I understand that. There's a world of structures between the firefighter on the beach road and Keaton Beach. There's a world of people live right there in the area, and they have a 30-minute time zone to get a fire truck and ambulance to it.
And yeah. That's like with the changes we're doing at Station 6 Keaton Beach. That's what we're working on, is cutting those times down drastically. And you're right, our average times in that area are in the high 20s.
Let me ask a question. Is it too late to put something like this on the ballot for this special election that's coming up and see what the people want to do?
I don't know.
I looked at my notes from
because my February meeting happened to be in the same notebook. If I wrote it down correctly, you have until April 22nd to get on the June ballot.
Why don't we consider that and let the people tell us what they want us to do? Well, what do y'all think about that?
I'd love to see it all took care of, but it's an expense that, you know.
How would this appear on the ballot? You know, would it be a straw ballot? I'm in favor of increasing the MSTU village, check that box, or I'm in favor of a fire uniform fire assessment on residential property. How would you do that, Hunter?
I would think it would be a straw vote.
That's what I'm thinking. You know, we'd be bound by some guys.
Yeah. I think that we could probably formulate a question or two for to put on. But the problem with that one is, again, remember what Dana told you, what the low turnout on that.
Yeah, that's true. You got a very low turnout. So it's going to make a big decision for us. Yeah.
Well, maybe if people think we're going to raise their what they have to pay, then they'll come out and vote.
Well, you do. Well, we do have, you know, you do have a 2020 election.
Well, that'll be a big one too.
Yeah.
Of course, that puts us two more years to be in limbo. And then our study then is 5 years old instead of 2 years old. But, you know, I think everybody's struggling the same as I am.
I am.
Because, I mean, I want the services.
But yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I want to hear from everybody. Come on.
Our tax collector's here as well.
Yeah.
Sam Ridgeway, 901 Riverside, Steve Hatchie. I've been hearing the study, I've been hearing the response to the study. What I'm concerned with right now is the level of funding that the fire department is getting now in dollars for the service we're all getting. I heard that you're using 1% sales tax for the equipment and that. Mm-hmm. I heard that you've got part of the MSTU that is running without fire department, but I haven't heard any dollars that he's presently getting to fund the fire department. I'm seeing in this study over $2 million is being asked for from the residents. First, what's the fund they have now to provide the services we're getting in dollars?
The fire expenditures, if I'm reading the right line now, is $2,175,000.
No,
that was the...
It's a proposed...
That's a proposed...
That's the proposed.
Yeah, it's all in the fund. Proposed.
It's what
never went through. What
I'm sure he can tell you that it's much.
It's about $1.1 million.
$1.1 million. And what is proposed is a little bit over two.
With the $199 assessment, it's over $2 million. The $177 would give us an additional about $600,000, which would be used to hopefully hire additional firefighters.
Okay, I'm back to the dollars. Mm-hmm. That $1.2 million that's being provided now, mm-hmm, versus the $2 million that's being requested, is that on top of the $1.2 million?
No, sir.
That would raise the budget to that.
Up to two. A $195 assessment would raise the expenditure budget up to a little over $2 million.
So
basically, mm-hmm, I'm hearing right and thinking right that for $800,000 or $900,000 increase in the fire service budget, I would go to almost $200 a year in taxation.
Yes, the MSTU portion of your ad valorem tax bill would be reduced.
How much?
I don't know. It depends on the value of your home, so it's hard to give an answer. And you have to remember as well that part of the MSTU funds other budgets. So,
like, what part of the MSTU in percent does tax us for fire?
Daniel, you got the figure.
Do you know off the top of your head? Question, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
His question is how much I think of the millage that's assessed in the MSTU fund is used for fire.
It's used for fire.
It's
44%.
44%, half of it, about $70, almost.
Well, you would take your MSTU total off your tax bill and reduce it by the 44%.
Okay.
And then add the assessment.
Right. If is the MSTU right now $140?
It depends on the value of your home. So the MSTU portion of your tax bill depends upon the value.
Then I can figure that.
Yes, sir.
So roughly, in overall figures, for $800,000 increase in the fire budget, then I would like to know what increase in fire protection for all parts of the county would be.
And that's exactly what I said a few minutes ago. Before I can sell it to the public, I have to let them know what you're getting for your money. What, you know, this is what you're buying. This is what you're getting. So, you know, I'd like to see. I'd like to see you tell us this is what, not what's ideal, because we'll never be it the best there is, but just to provide basic coverage in the areas that do not have coverage now, what would that cost be? Nothing superfluous, just the basic, what would it take? Okay. And that way we have a better idea. You know, we can answer your question and probably everybody else's question, and this is how much it's going to cost. We can get by with $200 extra a year. It only takes $150, or we may need $250. I don't know, you know?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Exactly.
I mean, we're trying to buy something. I'm not sure exactly what we're buying.
Yeah, and that's where, like I said before, it's, you know, what we're putting on is the 24-hour coverage at the Keaton Station. The experts in the scene hatchery, and the, like, and the benefit countywide is that main station one is no longer covering 1,200 square miles.
So
we're cutting the response their coverage area, so this way they can go to the other areas faster. So they're available more often. But as far as that, you know, if we wanted to say apples to apples, and we wanted to put pay people in every fire station, I can look at it and say, you know, we have, this is a volunteer portal we have, we need to add a paid person or two or whatever it would need to be. I can get you those numbers. But the other added cost in that is none of our volunteer stations are equipped to house Chris Apple.
What are your thoughts about the Western
Harris?
That's part of
your
district too.
It is part of my district. In we don't, with the aging volunteer force, that means we have no coverage unless that comes from here. Is that true?
Sure.
If you wanted to go to another RIS to a fire, you got to send the parent fire truck out there.
It would be a down station for
what your argument is if we fund this, then you've got better coverage in steam hatching and in the beaches area. So that would free up the pairing unit so that we can get out there.
So, like, let's say there was a call right now, we are using Keaton Beach. If our main crew had to respond to Keaton Beach, and they just finished that call, and then they had a call in Not All Rise, they would have to travel from Keaton Beach all the way around to get there.
So in that sense, that helps a little bit out there.
And that's where the benefit is, by having these other crews available, we're not pulling them to the far reaches of the county every time we have.
This is a tough decision, and I want to let you know where I stand.
The need has been identified. There is a need for some additional money to fund fire services. But it all depends on what you can afford. You know, if we had $10 million to add to the budget for fire services, we could staff fire stations and build new fire stations all over this county. That's an ideal world. We can't afford that, I don't think. And would we be improving our situation if we did a fire assessment? I can't see that we would. If we did a half mil increase in the MSTU, only 44% of that's going to fire, right? And we've identified that's, what, $600,000? I could go along with some hybrid on the assessment. If you could just put something on those people who don't pay anything. There's too many houses, there's too many RVs that don't pay not one red cent for fire service into. To add a fire assessment onto those people, in addition to having to add that same fire assessment on top of Jim's house and my house and your house, is what I'm wrestling with. But the needs have been identified. It's there. And it's just like, you know, I don't have any children in school anymore. I mean, my living is a school teacher. Not going to pay school taxes. And they didn't get any direct benefit from it because they didn't have any children in school. I got grandchildren in school now. So it's a, as for me, I would support at this time, if I had to make a decision today, a very small fire assessment. $50. And let that, if you keep the MSTU the same, but if you don't roll it back with the same amount of money, what are we talking about? You're passing the tax burden off on the poor people.
Plus, you're going to have the expense of instituting.
And you got the expense of implementing the assessment.
You could save that expense if you just up the MSTU.
So I'm still wrestling. Haven't made a final decision, but I'm leaning towards no fire assessment because we've already determined that if you don't pay any taxes and you put a fire assessment on, it's still going to pay it. They put it right there in the trash. Mark, I'm going to ask you that the way it works.
Mark, yeah, sure. Do you know about how many of the 140 assessments that's
come
out on a tax deal that people don't pay?
Yeah, I can get that information.
Yeah. And I was trying to explain to them, you won't sell a certificate on $140 for solid waste assessment.
We'll sell certificates.
Yeah, you did, yeah. You will sell them all?
Yeah, we will.
Just the solid waste?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, now you probably have, if you do a fire assessment, you probably have a solid waste and fire.
Yeah, they would both.
Get a little more money.
Yeah.
Potentially.
They would both go in. So if we sell every certificate we can.
So there, you can't just throw it in the trash because it will become a lien against your property.
Absolutely.
You don't think.
Right. Yeah.
And it'll fall off at 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be surprised by the next year.
Right. The last year we had 97% sale. The years before that we had 100%.
So somebody will buy
that certificate.
That certificate. So he'll have a lien on it.
Yes.
And the interest rates. You did 18%.
You start, yeah, and then they'll go down from there.
Have we ever had a tax deed application on $140 for the solid waste?
Since I've been there, I do not remember one. No, I do not remember one. Most of the time, it's just sitting there.
Right.
And it does. It gets struck in the county when it gets, you know, to a certain amount.
What happens is you got that assessment sitting there, and they buy it with 18% interest on it.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll never make application for tax deed because for every application for tax deed that you make is approximately $500.
Right.
So you add that to all the interest, advertising costs, and all that, and you're getting $1,000. That's the value that you give him.
Yes.
He's getting 18% of that time.
Yeah.
Complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's complicated.
But,
you know, whatever the pleasure of the board is. So I wanted to ask some questions. We're going to have to get some information together on the RV sites that are receiving. The only thing that we deal with specifically is on solid waste is when there's an exemption. That's the poverty guideline. That's the only time we have an exemption on our side. But I need to get with Bruce and get some figures. And I think, Mr. Moody, you wanted to look at RVs that were lived in year-round, I believe?
Yeah.
Thinking about it, I think the only way to actually police that is by using Bruce's office and their homesteading that property. Because we don't have enough manpower to have somebody out there to know, you know, somebody living there.
Oh, you got one home there, and you got two aluminum buildings with air conditioners in them, a car parking front of them.
Correct.
And door, then you got two camper trailers in the backyard, and four cords run out in four directions off of one server.
Yeah, that's right.
You're right.
You're exactly right.
And you're paying $140 a year for garbage.
We, those.
I mean, I paid about a third of that.
$46.67. Yeah. Now, what we do try, we have a dwelling. You know, you'll have a parcel of land that has one dwelling, three RVs, and then maybe even another dwelling, if we deem it a dwelling, when we go out to those. So, and we can sit down and look at some of those parcels.
I'd love to get with you one day to try and show you some that I've seen and wondered if they've ever been.
Absolutely. Yeah. Our computer, the way it's set up, when we pass that parcel with GPS, it tells us what the assessment is, whether it's 140, whether it's 280.01. Depending on what we have captured there.
Right.
So we can do that. We can just set it up and ride by them, and I can tell you exactly what it says.
Well, y'all know then as well as we did, but in our, you know, when we're out in our districts, how many of the other dwellings that there are.
Yeah, we try to catch them all.
Quite a few.
There's quite a few.
Quite a few nowadays. Yes. And I mean, I think I know one, but still, just like Commissioner Moody said, if you've got, you know, three or four dwellings there, and they're paying $140, and we're going in the home every year with our garbage fees, then, you know, something's wrong.
That's right.
Well, you know, you got to look at it a different way, too, because I had somebody call me about that, and he has a mother that's over 75 years old. The only home that she has is that small little home that's sitting in his yard. And she draws about $300-something a month, Social Security, so she gets.
And her option is to come up to our office, prove to us with a bank statement, basically, here's what I get, and we write it off, which in June we send y'all a report for the previous year, how much was written off.
But if wait a minute, though, if that property is still in the son's name, and he's just got somebody living there, that's no different than me having rentals on mine. I'm still responsible, you know, for five that I'm paying.
But what he's saying to his Pam is that they both, the house and the mobile home, is assessed, and that mother has the option to go to his office and make application for emergency under the poverty guidelines, and he can exempt them. That's the one you have to pay for the reserve.
Yes, I'm just saying, the son paid two times 140. Is what I'm saying. That's where I'm coming from. I mean, I have to pay $140 for everyone that I have sitting on my property.
I got four rentals and I pay $140.
So, you know, I hear what you're saying, but I don't know that I agree with that.
Right.
Mark, can I ask you?
Whatever the pleasure is, right?
Can you remind me the FTE needed if the board approves this assessment? For your office to roll it out and implement it, I forgot what you said.
For the fire?
Yes.
For the fire system? I'm going to say it's close to one. I mean, it's close to one full-time employee. Yeah.
So you would have to assess enough to capture what it would cost.
Increasing this budget.
Yes, sir.
From your part of the...
It would be very a lot more simpler if you just increase the millage in the EMS.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. That's the simplest way to do it.
But that's a different set of people that would be paying the tax than if you did the
fire assessment on each parcel.
Yes. And that's where we're all stuck. We've got philosophical.
I believe that report if you have land, let's just say Four Rivers, it's a different price.
No price.
No price on it.
No price on it. Okay, I thought I saw something in there about commercial and agriculture. Can't be, that's right, because the legislature passed a law that said they cannot be. Okay.
How would that affect Florida Gas, for instance?
It'd be their building.
It'd be their building. You get their building, but as far as where the pipe room and what Bruce is already accessing for the...
It'd be the square footage of their building.
Yeah, yes, sir. That's the way I understand the commercial side.
And Georgia City could be square footage.
Square footage, yes, sir.
And Super Puff out here that took over Tom.
Right.
That'd be square footage.
Mark, you had a question?
One for clarification for myself and maybe for others as well.
I wouldn't give it.
Going back to Mr. Yates' suggestion of the $50 assessment with no change in the MSTU, going through my notes, $199 would bring in $2,380,000. So $50, would I be correct to assume, would bring in roughly around $600,000?
I don't know.
Yeah, that would be 1/4.
But that's your total budget. That's not the addition. So the $199 would bring the budget up to $2 million. But we already have a $1.2 million.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm not even talking about budget. I'm talking about additional revenue.
Yeah.
The total, when you added in the extra costs that they had, it was 2.38 million.
Yeah.
So 50 would be roughly 600,000 in new revenue if you didn't keep the MSG the same.
It would be
gross revenue.
538, yes.
Which would make sure I was looking at
that. Would not fulfill all of the immediate needs that we have.
Yeah, we did plan to need about $600,000. So.
What a lot of people are going to say is y'all going up on the taxes to build something to keep beach. And what then you go out of people at Shady Grove, Spring Warriors, and then talk to the River and East Senior, they're going to be saying, well, why not us?
And that's what I'm saying.
And I mean, it's a two-bladed sword. But if you're going to do one, you need to do them all. I mean, it needs to be where it can cover everybody the same amount of time.
Yeah, I'm not going to vote for something that's not going to help the people that have no services now. Look, how can I expect those people to pay and get nothing?
They would.
You got different amounts of houses at Spring Warrior and also the river you haven't seen half you already.
Yeah, but that's what you're saying. But still, comparing to Osceola, and then if you go down Mandalay, you've got to go down that long road. Your house has been burnt down to the ground by then, especially if you've got a mobile home or something. So, essentially, yeah, it sounds good. There's more people freed up, but they can't get to the farm in time.
Still the same distance.
Still the same distance.
What if, instead of looking at it as the band-aid approach, I mean, we're bringing options. The fire doesn't end an option. Raising the MSU is an option. Where a band-aid approach is saying we're going to put all of these, you know, what we need in all these different stations at one time, it's unrealistic. But what if we came up with a plan that says, we're going to let a few years go by, and then we're doing a systematic approach of saying, let's start putting it on, and pull the band-aid off a little bit slower instead of all at once. Would that be more what you want to see? Or, to put, firefighters in every station immediately, it's a big number. But now, if you wanted to, we could come up with a plan to say, over the next however many years, our goal is to get to a number.
Our goal, that doesn't promise anything.
But I think we looked at that initially, actually paid firefighters everywhere, and we started getting up, in the $400 or $500 range for assessments. And I don't even think that was everything.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can do it. It's just, if you think $199 is high,
it's a very high.
No, so
that's a trade-off.
Yes. I was going to suggest, after hearing over an hour of discussion, very good discussion, and a lot of questions, that we consider the option to leave things just like they are. Now, I know the needs have been identified, but I can't, for reasons that you stated, support any additional
taxes of this kind. The $50 idea I thought about wouldn't produce enough revenue to be worth having to implement this thing. So, that's where I am.
Okay, let me tell you then. I'm somewhat okay with that, but I still would like to have this on some ballot. If it's not, if we don't think we're going to have the turnout here coming up for this election, let's plan on the 2020 when everybody's going to vote then.
I have no objection to that.
Because, you know, here we've got Ursula Miller sitting here that lives at Cedar Island, and you don't have fire protection. And I've got my people in Mandalay. I mean, so I don't want to make a decision we're not going to do anything when these people, we all deserve protect. That's what we're here for, is to look out for the citizens. So I can kind of go along with it for a little while, but I want the citizens to have input into this. Now, you know, again, it has to be a campaign where the facts are put out there. If you really want, in hopes of, you hope to get it passed, that we're not just going to be looking at charging you an extra amount of money every year. If you live in this area, you have no fire protection, or, you know, it's just like when we were trying to get the hospital, the 1 cent to build the hospital, we had to show the need. Mm-hmm. And then the citizens voted for it, mm-hmm. because they saw the need. So, that's how, are you okay with that?
I'm okay, but let's try and shoot, putting this on the 2020 ballot. And in the meantime, we can ask our fire chief.
Yes.
Give us a slower approach to how we get to our goal. And between now and 2020, which is right around the corner, we'll just have to live long. One more year.
Where I'm at with it, I'm going to relate that to one penny toward fire protection unless my constituents get the same thing as the other areas.
That's right. That's right.
That's 100% as far as the way I feel.
That's right.
And I feel for your area in Shady Grove, and I feel for, I got a house at Deep Penny River, it ain't much to it, but I'm sure that gets turned down, by now.
Right.
And I want my constituents down the Bucket Road and down River Road to have the same thing as everybody else.
That's
or I'm not on track going up.
I'm with you on that.
I think we're all, it's understandable to have the citizens voice themselves at this point. I think we should put it
through. And I'd like to put the difference between what you did with the hospital, because it's countywide, and what you're going to do with the fire system is going to be in the unincorporated areas. And like those people you're talking about, they continue, they don't want to know before they support
that. That's right.
What they gonna get out of that?
That's exactly. What are you buying? What are you? I said that 10 times. What are you buying? But I do want to hear from you, Ursula. You know, what do you think? Because right now, I mean, you know, we all have a lot of us have houses down there. But what are your thoughts? I just want to hear from a citizen.
As a resident down there.
Yes.
My husband is our only volunteer down there. He's in fire and safety and has a degree in it, mm-hmm. that works 40 plus hours a week at the mill. So therefore, he's not down there. Our weekends and evening, he's on call.
Mm-hmm.
He can or can't, and this isn't a personal thing, but it blocks our personal life because we have to stop what we're doing so he can go to a call. That's not a problem. He loves doing that. But I think the county is setting themselves up. I'm not a lawyer, but I think they are setting themselves up in situations like this because we have no fire service down there full time. We have no ambulance and all that, but yet all these tourists come in, and then you're not giving them any protection. And that's just my personal opinion. Like I said, I'm not a lawyer. In my opinion, there is more camper fires and more little home fires down in our area than there are house fires. Am I right or wrong?
Probably for that area.
Yes. Do we need it? Absolutely. Would I be offended or mad to raise the MSC, even if it's 25? That would roll in $600,000 at the start and get us moving, get the ball moving. I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem paying the $199 that was up on the board earlier if it provides me with services. If, when Brian is at work, if something I see clouds rolling, I usually call Brian and ask him if he's got any updates or anything going on down here. I'm not hired to do that type of work. I'm not trained, but I still call it in and then he'll turn around and call him. I mean, what kind of service is that we're getting for what we're paying now? And then it's not to be offensive to you, I'm just telling him how they come in. Your area, the same way. You have two stations in your area, am I correct? District 4? Do you have anybody full-time?
No.
See, we don't either. Mm-hmm. And you still haven't hired anybody, have you?
We need to get that fire. We're grabbing a station down there here today and the next week.
I know, but a person?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
They'll be down there.
But how long has that been going on? The building's up there dilapidated for years. Steam hatching, look at steam hatching. They don't even have what I would call a fire station. It's a dilapidated, falling apart metal sheet metal building. Have you been to it?
Yes.
It's an eyesore.
Mm-hmm.
Your district at least has painted. They're not offensive to the eye, I guess, lack of better word, to drive by.
Volunteers did that, though.
Yes, absolutely, they did. And the same way with Keaton, that volunteer station that was just transferred back to the county.
Yeah. Well, right now, if we had the manpower to fight a fire, I don't care what the place looks like. I mean, I do care, but the main thing that we're talking about is, you know, I want somebody to put my fire out before exactly. My house burns down.
Now, and like someone said earlier, that's if we try to man every station all at one time, that's going to be a huge...
We can't.
Well, no, we can't do it. Can we not find some way to hit one area? And I'm just positively, instead of putting that extra man at steam catching, they run with one now, can we spread him out and maybe put him up in her area? Can we, like, kind of spread the love for a little bit? The fire truck's going to be paid off in 5 years, so you're going to free up that money.
No.
Keep that money.
That's one cent. Money they make good work operations.
Right.
Well, it's just, it's I hear what you're saying. I wanted to know what you thought. I want to know what citizens think. But again, what we've been saying here is, you know, I have a lot of people, my constituents up in the western end, that would be paying and don't have anything now, still won't have anything.
That's what they're saying at the beach.
And right, so I mean, we've got, I don't know what to do.
It's just sort of rocking a hard place because to do it full-fledged, it's going to cost millions. I'm talking millions.
I see where you say start with something and then build it from there.
We've done with that, and we finally got to the point where took back the county has taken back the station, made it a legal building for even an employee to be in there, and then get them set up, operating, and then let's move on to the next one. You know, try to work something out, work together from all of our places.
I got you. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
So, my question is, I understand the board's intent, and now we always have our budget preparation session. If the board wishes to increase the millage, obviously we can do it at that time. Getting back to the process for enacting or not enacting the fire assessment, what is the next step? You've adopted the resolution of intent. Is it the board's desire that we stop where we are? And can that be communicated at a workshop, or what do we need to do next?
I can't go along with something when I don't know that.
Aren't we in a workshop now?
Everything's fair and equitable.
Okay, we're in a workshop now, so you put it on the agenda what their feelings will be at the next.
We're on the next agenda, and we'll have a firm decision made by.
I think Mr. Moody said I'm very adamant about it, just like he is, until it's fair and equitable. And I hear what she's saying. You've got to start somewhere, but you know, and I don't know, Fire Chief, if there's some. If we can come out, like I said, with a bare
minimum of what we could do to at least provide some level of service, and what would be the lowest price that would cost us?
That's at that 177 mark, but it's estimated at that 600, that's the bare minimum right now. That's, yeah, that puts on, like I said in the past years, we need to get a dedicated fire inspector. There's statutes that we need to keep up with. So that's one of the big ones that we need, plus the firefighters. I said the second person is being added, you know, the one person in a 24-hour coverage, like Mr. Miller was saying, you know, if her husband's out fishing on the boat, you know, on weekend, we're having to come from town. So that's where we're saying, you know, the Monday through Friday is good. It's better than what we had. 24-hour coverage is what we should be doing.
And are any of our other fire stations equipped for 24?
We had to do modifications to.
So we don't have a fire station to place a firefighter.
For our finance director, if you can come back with how much would the MSTU have to be increased just to yield 600,000?
Isn't that a high increase? A little over half a million.
How much?
A little over half a million. It would go from 1.1677 to 1.7499.
Yes.
May I ask Danielle, what else comes out of the MSTU other than fire? Some of that goes to solid waste?
You have the building department, code enforcement, planning department, business license collection, and animal control, and we transfer to the general fund a portion of the recreation at the end of the year.
So that MSTU is split into a lot of little pieces. And to do something for fire, if you did, what you said, it's going to take a little over half a mil to generate, for just for fire, an extra 600 tons. I'm going to limp along until the 2020 ballot. And I want to make sure, Conrad, that if we do this ballot in 2020, it's only those folks in the unincorporated area that get to vote on this proposal. I don't think it's right to let this election be a countywide, all the city residents be making a decision about what county commission does on our county fire.
That's a good question.
Pardon?
That's a good question. Of course, we've got time to figure it out.
Well, that's right. Our supervisor of elections will figure out how she's going to do that.
Yes, sir.
But well, that thought occurred.
Y'all said.
That word is limited on ballots, 75 words.
Oh, we can limit it. And it might have to be two questions. You know,
two
separate questions. We'll just have to, that's just, it's an interesting process.
Well, it's, you know, it is complicated. It's a very difficult thing. What we don't need to do is let politics influence how we go about it. What we got to do is service our people, provide fire protection, put politics aside.
Okay. I've heard everything from Ollie, and he always gives me good advice. Would you like to offer us some good advice?
I live in the change room, and we've come to accept what we've got. We lost four houses, and we had one very wilting. I was there 20 minutes before the fire truck got there. They call it. So that's the real world there, okay? And Joe Hartsfield, all of those. But the thing we do have, we've got, I think, the best volunteer fire department in the county.
Sure do.
And I'd like to see you figure a way to enhance the volunteer. Madison County's got, they got the city fire department, they get each volunteer department. I think it's $40,000. You can figure out what it is. And they fund themselves and they participate. They put a fire out. They probably got as good a fire rating as anybody. But anyway, the other thing I'll say, and I'm shooting myself in the foot, but last year, I think the legislature put up the figure. None ad valorem special assessment. The only benefit the people that pay, right?
that you're going to see?
Yeah, it's got to do that. Okay. Yes.
Well, 60-something percent of fire department told me 60-something percent of our fires caused go to a grass fire. But yet, I got a little bit of land. I don't pay anything, wouldn't pay anything other than under special assessment. But I would get the benefit from it. You know, that fire department's going to go to you at all. Yeah. About what it is, but mm-hmm. That's some of the things going around my head. But the Far Farm Bureau or Sunnyvale Branch, we got it off the landowners. Okay, remember we had an individual come here and say you couldn't do it last year. The board didn't know. I don't think we knew. The mouse can have take it off of theirs, but yet they get the benefit. And back to the point, if it's a non-adjudicable assessment. Stuff the benefit to people that pay. That right, Mr. Bishop? And there's a lot of benefits to go to it that don't pay now.
Before you got here, that horse
was the tanker turning over on the highway. You know? I mean, our fire department's getting 10 hours out there. Somebody has to pay that.
That's right. And you got EMT, that's a real necessary. They come to me and that's good.
Yeah, good.
I encourage us to figure out a way to strengthen the volunteers' fire department because I know what a good one looks like. You know, what that's worth.
Appreciate you.
Okay, so bottom line, what are we going to do? We push this can down now to the next meeting? Is that what we're doing?
We can't make a decision.
No, I know that, but I mean, we can make a decision of what we're doing. Vote on later.
Well, I understood what y'all said, that y'all were going to vote on whether you're going to continue on or are you going to just drop the resolution for the special assessment.
That's Commissioner Moody, do you want to continue on with the fire assessment or do you want to kick it out?
If it's not going to help my constituents, I'm through with it. I want it to be fair for Shady Grove, Spring Warrior, down the Penn Holloway Road. I want to get out your area out there off Johnson Stiffen Road. I want everything. It don't seem like we're getting volunteer fire departments a lot of participation. People that stay in town are stretched just to make a living. They they own jobs somewhere trying to make a living. They haven't got time to sit at home and wait for phone ring to be volunteer fire. That's what I'm hearing people say. That's what I've heard in the past. Right now, I don't know. It's just because for me, I'm not for going on with it. Because I can see right now the people in your constituents and mine or any of y'all is not going to go along with being any extra tax unless it benefits them too. I can just see that. I mean, that's what I'm hearing. Ever since we had it in the paper a few weeks ago about the fire assessment, that's all I heard. You know, they want to know what we're going to do for my area.
Well, for it to benefit my people and everybody and your people, for it to benefit everybody, we would have to do an assessment and have it enough that he could come back with a plan that's going to cover everything.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the bottom line.
But the figure I'm hearing, there's no way to cover everything. Yeah. Also, the Ecofini, Spring Warrior, Shady Grove, you know, I know you got to start somewhere, but like that gentleman told me used to be, he's a retired firefighter now, and he said if you had a nice firehouse halfway between the beach and St. Hattie, you cut the time in half both ways, and if you had 24/7 fire truck and ambulance sitting there halfway between the beach and St. Hattie, he said build a nice fire station on the highway, and they can go both ways, that would serve a whole end down there, and it would cut the time to leader retreat all the way up for the fire tower. So they come from town, they could be there at the same time.
It would be taking a benefit away from a lot of people too.
Then you're taking something away from people. So, but then again, if they had a full-time 24/7 fireman, but two men there 24/7, and an ambulance down there, it would really increase the area. It would help them a lot too, what he was explaining to me, and it makes sense.
Okay, so I'm kind of hearing your comments for not pursuing this.
I'm not.
Commissioner,
it's a difficult decision, knowing that there's a need out here that just needs to be met. But at this time, I'm not for pursuing this uniform method of taxation at this time. Now, after we put it on the ballot in 2020, then I'm open to listening to whatever the people tell us.
Commissioner Murphy.
As much as I would like to go forward with this assessment, because we need it now, not tomorrow. And it would help alleviate pressure in the north end of the county if we have a logistics station in the positions you want. I can see the logistics behind it. But it is a knife that's going to cut both ways. And I think it needs to go to a vote, to be honest with you. It doesn't matter which direction that we look at.
Right.
It's going to cut either way. But I want to hear what the people have to say about it through a vote. And I think that would be the best measure to go through. Even though we need this now, I would love to do it right now. But I don't think we can do that.
Okay.
I don't think we can.
So I don't think we're going to pursue this.
Okay.
We can't vote on it today, but just by polling the board, it looks like that we all would like to see more public input. If you want the services, then are you willing to pay for it? So I think that's where we are.
I do have a quick question for Dan. Can we pull any source from the National Defense Authorization Act?
Not familiar with that.
For budgetary terms.
So I would have to check into it. I'm not familiar with if you can use the program.
Well, I think there's a sister program to the law enforcement. I think it's 1033, I think is the number of the program under the NDAA.
Well,
I might be able to supplement this. It's a possibility. We'll look into it. When I go home, I'll look more into it.
Okay, anybody else wish to speak? This is not an easy job sometimes. Okay, we've already adjourned the other meeting, so I guess we're done. No motion and no second, since we're not voting. Everybody want to go home?
Yeah, really.
There you go.
That's something.